Sandy, do you have that on? Okay, great. This will start Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council meeting, March 13th. Thank you, members, for being here on time. Wanted to introduce new members, but we're missing a couple, so I think I'll delay that a little bit, if that's all right. First order of business is just to review and approve the agenda. Jane?
Nathan, should we have an entry for the budget review, for the update, the forecast update?
There is. If you look under 4C, February forecast, Council Treasurer Jane Haynes.
I was working off the old one that I printed 2 days ago, I guess, or whenever. Okay, thanks.
We're going to give you a chance to talk.
Thank you.
All right. Would you make a motion to approve the agenda?
Sure.
Was that correct?
Sure.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next is a review and approval of the minutes of the meeting from December 11th. It's in your packet. It was posted on the website. Is there a motion to approve the minutes? Any discussion, corrections? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Any conflicts of interest that anybody has to report on today for any of the items that are coming up? All right, great. I'm going to turn this over to Mark right now.
Mr. Chair, members, welcome. A couple of quick things for you, and then I'll turn over to a couple of informational pieces that will come from others. The first of all, some introductions. You all know that you all know Heather Koop, our assistant director. You all know Sandy, our analyst, and Sandy Smith. But we don't have Amanda here. She had her baby, so and there were some pictures over here for people to take a look at if they want to. So we have a new Amanda, and that is Lori Bucks. Lori will be with us for about the next 6 months, so I get to know her, and she's the one sending you the updates on a weekly basis and other emails. So. With that, a couple of things. I had a chance to meet with Clean Water Council Coordinator Bart Peschel. She was interested in seeing it. Well, number one, finding out what our process was on handling applications, how the council did that. But she also was wondering about future collaborations between the Clean Water Council and this council. So there is an interest, at least at this point, for a few of their members and a few of our members possibly to get together to talk about potentials for the future, kind of brainstorm. If there is an interest by any of you all within the council here to do that, I can move forward with Bart to try to set something up. Is there anybody who might be interested? Temporary nods? Sort of, yes? Okay, great. Then I'll get a hold of Barb and we'll try to work something out there. The other thing is just to let you know I was invited over to speak to the Minnesota Association of County Land Commissioners. There was about, I think, a dozen counties represented there, and that was last week. Had a good conversation, had a chance to talk to them about how they might be able to apply for funds, either with CPL funds or with the larger funds through this council. A lot of very good interest and a good dialogue that happened back and forth, so just wanted to fill you in on that. The other thing, last thing I have, I guess, is, and then I'll hand it over to some other people. The open meeting law considerations, you've seen some of the emails that have come out, the postings. Just to reiterate a couple things. First of all, I've had lots of discussions with nonpartisan staff, and to kind of get to the bottom of a little bit more towards the bottom of the open meeting law requirements. Primarily, we just need to make sure we ensure that all votes are open, attributed to who cast the vote, as well as making sure there's public disclosure at the time the council is aware of the who cast the votes as well. So proxies appear to be allowable as long as nobody is on the phone. But those proxies also have to be open to the public and disclosed as soon as they are since they're tallied. So the only problem with proxies is if somebody is on the phone participating, which means a member gives us notice in advance and we have them allowed to vote on the phone. That's where proxies are thrown out, and that's because we have to have all roll call votes. So in a nutshell, that's kind of it. There's no secret ballots, so your ballots today will be a little different than you had in the past. They will have your name on them, or you'll sign your name, and then we have to attribute that vote. Once the tally is taken, then we have to list who voted for who. Okay.
And for new members, our internal rules are that the only proxies that are used here for the election.
Correct.
Not for general business.
Yeah. And I should probably mention, that's a very good point. The allowance for the proxies is actually in our procedures that the council adopted back in 2009, I think it was. So, with that, we have before we get to the treasurer's report from Jane Kingston, I'm going to slip in one other really quick. Bowser, Bill Tenney, you come down quick. Bill has a very quick, positive, happy announcement for us.
Thank you. I'm Bill Penny, the Easement Section Manager with Fort Lawrence Soil Resources. You'll recall last November, the council gave us permission to convert RIM WRP into a new RIM flatland program for a variety of reasons. We had stalled out with RIM WRP, and we had money left over from phases 4, 5, and 6. In January, we had a sign-up for RIM wetlands. We received 177 applications in 6 weeks for about 12,000 acres. We were able to fund 4,600 acres, which is 44 applications. So I'm happy to say we're back up and running in the wetland restoration business, and we will be getting these projects closed and restored shortly. Thank you.
Any questions for Bill on that?
Great, thanks.
Jane, would you like to give a quick overview? Treasurer?
You should have in front of you the draft 2/26/15 update on the forecast, which is a February forecast. There are two forecasts per year. They are in February and March and November and December. Actually, I think they're technically done February and November, but we really don't get to them until the following month. And this is a snapshot, as I've described it to you before, and it's a moving target. It's changing, you know, every month as sales taxes and carry forwards and interest earnings and so forth are racked up. And I'll draw your attention to the box, the bold box on the bottom, where it has the forecast under fiscal year 16, which is 1.155 million, and under fiscal year 17, which is 105,672. The action item is this 1 million. It's too late to use that money in the current bill. It creates all sorts of logistical problems and totally not advisable. What the good news is that money will roll over into this next round, and it'll just add to our balance to be allocated in the next round. And the change from the last time we got the forecast, which was in December, is all attributable to sales tax increases. People were spending money before Christmas time, evidently. And that's it. I think we just have to approve. What I'm suggesting we approve is moving that balance into next year's allocation total.
And no action is approval.
No action is approval? Okay.
Because we've got
we can do nothing. That's easy.
Yeah.
Any questions?
No questions.
Okay.
So we have a little more money next year.
The last thing in the information section 4.
Let me just, you know, for a second, just so that the new members understand, we try to carry about a 5% balance so that if the the actual projected revenue goes below what or the actual revenue is below the projected revenue, we don't run into problems with the bill. And the recommendation is 5 to 10%. We've always been at the 5% level. Just if you're wondering why we didn't spend all the money.
And MMB doesn't recommend going any lower than 5?
No. Sorry.
Good points. Last 4C, I'm going to hand it over to Sandy Smith to give you a quick update on these project areas.
This memo is just being provided as an informational piece to council members. As you know, we ask project managers to provide status updates twice a year in February and August. And this is just a summary of those updates. It's a snapshot in time. Members had asked to have more sort of a play-by-play on the status of who's getting their final reports in. And so this is sort of a list of that. At the time, there were three programs that I had concerns about that I listed in this memo for you to review. This does not require any council action at this time. If you'd like copies of any of the status updates, you can let Lori know, and she'll be happy to email them to you or mail them to you. There's about 300 that came in, so it's a lack of copy for everybody. Thanks.
Any questions for Sam? Great. Well, we have now the two members we were waiting on. I thought it'd be nice to introduce ourselves to our two new members, Representative Bill and Julie Blackburn, who are joining us. Barry Tilley's on a train with his wife on a long-planned vacation. And unable to join us today, but I thought it'd be nice to have some kind of introduction of everybody to everybody, and want to suggest maybe you introduce yourselves and how long you've been on the council, and maybe why you wanted to sit on the council, and just go around the room. Denny, I'll start with you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Denny McNamara. I'm a state representative from Hastings, about 20 miles downriver from here. I've been in the legislature 14 years. I'm the current chair of the Environment, Natural Resources, Finance, and Policy and Finance Committee. I was a landscape contractor for about 30 years prior to being in the legislature, and a little bit of the time when I first served in the legislature. Have been on the council for, I think, 6 years. I was not on the first 2 years. The Republican, the first 2 years, was Representative Bob Gunther from Fairmont.
I'm Sue Olson. I am a senior attorney at Hormel Foods Corporation in-house. I am also on the Cedar River Watershed District Board of Managers. I've been on the council for the past 2 years. This is the beginning of year three. I don't know what all the questions were. And the reason I wanted to be appointed to the council, I'm a governor appointee, is I have a very, very deep passion for conservation and habitat and wanted to make sure the money is being spent in the right places.
I'm Elizabeth Wilkins. I'm retired. I was an educator and also a farmer, and I do know how to milk cows and drive tractors, for those of you who like that kind of thing. I did. The reason that I'm with the council is because of an extreme interest in all things conservation-minded, and I'm starting to learn what that looks like in my older age, and I want to keep on learning, and this council is a great place to do that and maybe make some type of positive impact. I hope so. I'm from East Central Minnesota, where we have our farm, and up in near Mille Lacs Lake.
Good morning. Bill Ingebrigtsen, Senator District 8. I used to, before redistricting, represent Todd Douglas Grant in Stevens County. I live north of Alexandria, and I'll represent 8 townships in Douglas County and almost all of Otter Tail County. I represent over 1/10 of all the lakes in Minnesota, and ninth year in the Senate. I've been on this committee since the beginning, and have always enjoyed it and continue to enjoy it. Have at different times been in the, most of the time in the minority for the first 4 years and the majority of the second two. I was chair of the Environment Committee on the Senate side, and actually I sit on Environment Finance and Senate Finance now, and so that's me.
I'm Ron Shera, and I've been around Minnesota outdoor issues for 45 years as a columnist for the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and last 20 years as a television host. Now I'm known as the guy with the dog. I also have a degree, however, in journalism and fish and wildlife biology, which a lot of folks don't know about, but I'm here for the same reason, Susan, and I think everybody that is here, concerned for our natural resources and trying to make a difference.
I'm Julie Blackburn, one of the newest members of the council, and I wanted to be on the Outdoor Heritage Council because of my deep interest in conservation, and have a lifelong passion of public service as well, and I feel like I have some background that might be helpful in making sure that the investments we're making are beneficial for all Minnesotans into the future.
Hi, I'm Tom Sachs. I'm the senator from northern Minnesota. I first 8 years, started in 2003, I represented District 3, which took in the Lake of the Woods, Northwest Dingle, Falls and Coochin County, most of Itasca, all of Aiken County, the northern half of Mille Lacs Lake, about 8,000 square miles. When we did the redistricting in northern Minnesota, lost a Senate district, the size of my district became about one half of that. So go figure. And so I represent the people of Senate District 5, and that includes Bemidji, Grand Rapids, and Walker. It gives you kind of an idea of the area that I have. I've been on this committee for, I think, about 4 years now. I'm chairman of State Government Finance in the Senate, but as Bill says, probably the key committee that we're both on is because that's where this particular, these recommendations hit the Senate, is in the Finance Committee.
I'm Jane Kingston. I'm from Eveleth, and spent all my life in the outdoors doing everything that everybody loves to do outdoors in Minnesota. And starting my second term as a governor appointee, and very excited to be here and continue the hard work and the good work that this council does.
Good morning, Bob Anderson. Live in International Falls. Presently serve as mayor of the community. This is my second time at being mayor. I was mayor about 30 years ago. I've spent 51 years working at the paper mill in International Falls, and my property line at home is on the Rainy River, which my property line is the U.S. border, so I look at Canada every day in the morning and make sure that it's there. And then I also own several hundred acres of property that manage for habitat and wildlife.
Good morning. State Representative David Dill. I represent pretty much all of northeastern Minnesota, Lake, Cook, St. Louis. And Coochin is about 15,800 square miles. That district is larger than nine states in the United States individually. I've been at this table with Representative McNamara for 14 years. When he's not been the chair of the committee on environment, I have been in different capacities as chairman of different things. I've been involved in the agriculture finance and the policy, and then natural resources finance and policy as well. I was appointed as the minority member by Speaker Dowd. My wife is from International Falls, that we live on the Canadian border, as close to the border as Mayor Anderson. I live on an island where we go by boat and snowmobile and every kind of imaginable transportation to get to and from work in Voyageurs National Park. And so I think you can link together why I would be here. I also had an interesting opportunity to actually have in my bill but pass off the House floor the legislation that authorized to put the LaSalle Council question on the ballot so that the voters could vote on it. So that's the reason that I am here.
And I'm David Hartwell. I, like Bill, have been here day one. It's been an honor. I just have a deep passion for the outdoors and the environment. I grew up as hunting and fishing. I gave up hunting in exchange for a camera a few years ago. Sizzle fishing. I had a great time fishing with my mother 2 weeks ago in Argentina for a week, where again she caught the most and biggest fish, which is what you're supposed to let mothers do. Of course I let her. But I've been involved in conservation in Minnesota for a long, long time, as well as nationally and internationally. I'm actually the chair of a group that does eradications on islands around the world of invasive species to protect endangered species. So we go in and remove 100% of the rats, the goats, the mongooses, the rabbits. And this year we're going to do cattle off an island in Panama, which are causing huge problems. But I just have a huge passion for environmental. All things environment. Delighted to be here and delighted to have all of you with me. So, with that, we'll move on to our next agenda item, which is the council calendar. We had a tentative calendar, if you'll remember, those returning members, was circulated before, and we didn't want to finalize it until we actually have a full council. The dates that you really have to be concerned about here are in yellow. Those are our meeting dates. The red dates are deadlines for action. But you don't need to come to a meeting to do that. That's about review of and allocation. So I'd love to have a motion to approve the calendar.
So
any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Please put these into your books and we'll have a busy year. Next on the agenda is an update on legislative action. Denny?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I believe in our packet we have the list of the different bills and amendments and where they're at. Maybe I'll just go through them. Do you want me to go through what we have and say what they are, Mr. Chair?
I think that's probably going to be helpful for everyone.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A1 amendment deals with the hiring process at Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. There's also a similar amendment that's been adopted on LCCMR by Representative Parkinson, who's carrying that bill. It allows the hiring to not be public, and it goes along the lines of what's currently done. The most recent example is the Water Commission executive director hired was under the process that we would like to follow here. And this is in consultation with the LCC and is in line with how it's done in other parts of state government. It may be controversial for some of the members on this council. I certainly recognize that. And I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you wanted, there may be some questions on this specific one? Do you want to deal with them like that?
Sure. Other questions?
Are LCCMR and LSOHC the only two that do involve the counselors in these hirings? Or are there other commissions where counselors are involved also?
Mr. Chair, Councilmember Kingston, I believe there probably are other examples. I'm trying to remember of a process similar to what we follow. I cannot think of any, but I thought someone mentioned there was a couple of bodies somewhere that do involve the council members. But there's probably more examples of ones that don't follow the process we use.
Despite some of the, you know, controversy involved in the last hire, my experience has always been that if you involve the people that are going to be affected by any decision, that it usually is a lot more palatable and smoother in the long run. And I don't really see why not having the council in coordination with LCC as it stands now doesn't work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Councilmember Kingston. Well, what I would say is I would recommend any of the council members talk with Mr. Hubinger from LCC and understand the process that we have adopted or proposed to adopt and is in the bill as it currently stands. If folks noticed, when we went around the room today, we talked about our passion and our reason for being on this council. Other than I'm not sure of Ms. Olson's expertise in regards to her legal work at her employer, and I know I served and Representative Dilbo served the chief executive officers of companies. His was way, way bigger than mine, and the chair, the same position. We probably had some HR experience, and some of those weren't so much fun. And if you begin to bring them together with something that's our passion, I think you have real lots of trouble.
I don't think anybody ever calls HR fun. If you do, I don't think it is fun, but it's hard.
And so that's what I would encourage you is to chat with Mr. Hubinger and understand actually what the bill does do. And I think it takes care of some potential really serious legal problems we could run into in the future, and it makes for a process that I think would not discourage terrific applicants. So that's kind of where it is. I know it's controversial, and any one of you can chat with me and understand what it is, but I think if you really want to understand how it works, Mr. Hubinger from LCC would be your best, Mr. Chair. I don't know if the other ones have questions on that. The next one is a, I think, relatively non-controversial Representative Hansen amendment. It deals with the definition of the carp that are coming up the river. The next one is another Representative Hansen amendment that was put in both in our Outdoor Heritage Bill and in LCCMR that dealt with some definition of it relates to neonicotinoids. I believe that legislation is probably going to come out in future committees because it is controversial, and I supported Representative Hansen's motion to put that in as long as it was non-controversial, and it's become controversial. So it was nothing that was, it did not come from the council originally. Probably the biggest thing and the most controversy and a significant amendment that actually, and I would say I believe at this point in the House, it's the only amendment that has serious consequence of the change from the council's recommendation would be the removal of the project here is the acceleration of shallow lakes and wetland enhancement phase 7. It's a project brought forward by the Whiter Nation in Clearwater County. That project has been removed. I'm sorry, did I say that wrong? And the money was added to accelerated shallow lakes and wetland enhancement phase 7. That money was moved from the Whiter to that project. That discussion is ongoing. As you all know, it centers around. Mr. Chair, do you want me to get into it a little more or not?
I suspect you're going to be asking, so you might have
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For those of you that were not here when this council adopted the Mississippi Northwoods Project, at that time, Senator Ingebrigtsen and I were chairing the committees of jurisdiction, and there was a lot of angst around PIL. And we ended up doing Mississippi Northwoods as a county forest because the county was willing to come forward and take on the project, and then it didn't have a PILT obligation. The reason I bring that up in the context of this project, this is another multi-million dollar project where we are taking state sales tax money and basically giving it to a non-state government unit of government to have this land in their possession. That allows for significant problems, I believe, in the future. And if you look at Mississippi Northwoods, I think you'll note, if you go back and listen to the tapes, there was a number of discussions around Mississippi Northwoods and the challenges when we ended up with a government unit other than the state owning that land. And I made a mistake when I reported it being a county forest, and I really am realizing, even though I brought up many of these concerns before this board at that time, there's the potential for a bike trail to be on that. There will be a bike trail through that land, absolutely. I believe that it will traverse the entire length of that land. There's currently 24 miles of ATV trails on there. That's a county forest that's located south of Highway 2. Standard ATV practice, state law, is that if you have land south of Highway 2, ATV trails are closed unless marked open. Crow Wing County has a county policy that their county forests are open unless marked closed. So we funded 100% of the acquisition of that property, gave it to Crow Wing County, and they now have 24 miles of ATV trails on that land that are open until they're marked closed. And that was paid for with money from here. A bike trail can be built through that entire length of land, and as long as they don't pave the trail, which was the only language I could get in the bill, they're free to build that trail through that land. I think that serves as a glowing example of why we don't want to buy land and have a government unit other than the state of Minnesota owning the land, because we as this council and the legislature have a lot less oversight over those entities. And I say that in the respect, whether it's the city of Columbus in Anoka County, Fond du Lac Tribe, Crow Wing County in Mississippi Northwoods case, or the White Earth Nation in Clearwater County. I think we should realize the challenges before us. The White Earth Nation, along with Fond du Lac, decides to manage at least one species and potentially other species differently than Minnesota DNR manages it. And I'm not talking about the ability for the Native Americans to hunt under a different season than we do. They have that throughout the reservation, throughout the ceded territory already. It doesn't matter if it's on the wildlife management area or on their own land. That's not what I'm talking about. But on their reservation land, they can set seasons differently and close seasons differently, and they have a history of doing that. And I don't mean that to degradate them, and that may not quite be the right pronunciation of the word, because I'm trying to work real closely with them. But I think this is going down a slope that Mississippi Northwood shows that we have to be really, really careful going down. This is a tough issue. It's been tough for this board, and it will be tough for the legislature to find a solution. So, Mr. Chair, that gives a lot of the history, and thanks for the flexibility. But that's where that issue is. It was a Representative Green amendment that took it out in House Environment Committee. I believe it's coming up probably in the next couple weeks in the House, and Senator Saxoff could probably say where the status is and where that's at in the Senate. that's so far where the bill is. There's other bills that are coming up, and maybe we can touch on them, but I don't know, you probably want to get other people's thoughts on this ordinance now.
I have to say that I was extremely disappointed when I found out that the House had amended to remove this project. In my opinion, it would not be that difficult for the legislature to amend the project and put in whatever requirements they want to control whatever the issues are that they see in the future. I personally feel that this was a move for people to not want to give money to tribes and not about the project. You can put all kinds of controls and contingencies and conditions on a grant to anybody and say, unless you follow these things, you're not going to get the money. And then if the tribe didn't want to do it that way, they could say, thanks, but no thanks, we're not going to take it. It's possible to do that, but by just removing the project and sending it somewhere else, to me, that looks like somebody just doesn't want the tribes to have money. And that's not what it's about. It's about the conservation project. It's not about who asked for the project. And I'm incredibly disappointed that this happened. And that's just my opinion.
Jane?
Well, I hope we all speak what our opinions are, and mine is that the pilt issue is not sufficient to remove it, since we're talking out of both sides of our mouth and doing acquisitions all over the state. Pilt is an issue. We've been talking about it for years. Still isn't solved. We need to do that. The problems with Mississippi Northwoods, this is news to me that is the reason that this project was removed and the money redirected. All of the reasons that Mississippi Northwoods is problematic is also talking out of both sides of our mouth, since we give money to lots of counties, not just Clearwater or Crow Wing. There's Cass, there's Dakota. And the local governments must be made to bear what our agreement was and what their action plan is for that property. And that's an affirmative responsibility on the part of the applicant to say what they plan to do with it. They never said anything about the kind of huge network of ATV trails that are showing up on the documents that I've looked at. It is not up to the council to prohibit each and every activity that could ever happen on a piece of ground. That list would be infinite. And if they did not ask for this kind of activity on the land that was bought for habitat, then this is certainly not an issue that's over with. So to use that as an excuse to remove the white earth is whitewash. No pun intended.
Any?
Well, a couple of things. To Ms. Olson, we can't bind future legislature, and we cannot tell them that they, we can't tell the White Earth tribe that they can manage the land, and we can't make them allow the hunting the gray wolf. That's not legally allowed. The legislation clearly says the local units of government can pass their own laws in their own seasons, and today is the only one we know of that I can think of is they don't allow the hunting a gray wolf, but there's nothing to say that tomorrow they're going to close the hunting of whatever species they want or open whatever species they want. They're free to do that. That's land that they have to have that authority under the government. And we could pass something that says they can't do something, but it wouldn't have any authority. And we also can't find future legislators. And to Ms. Kingston, I brought up many times those ATV trails were there. The one thing I didn't know, and I would say that Crow Wing County never did tell us, was that Crow Wing County forests are managed as open unless marked closed, because they were south of Highway 2, and I didn't know that other counties had different rules along those lines. But again, those trails were there, and if anybody went and looked at them, it clearly was. And it's past history to use them. They were used. Those trails were used by the hunters that leased the land, and before the land was privately leased, the general public rode on those trails. So there's a history and a use of that, and under current law, they're open, and they're being used, if I'm not mistaken, today. They've been used, never quit, since we owned it.
Tom?
You know, I've got to leave for a few minutes to go over the Capitol, but I was just going to interject for a minute here what the process is over at the Senate before I take off. And I think this has been pretty consistent. When Bill was the chairman of the finance, natural resources and finance, and environment, natural resources and finance committee, I think it was pretty much handled the same way. The recommendations went to the finance committee, as I said, were generally referred to that committee where there was a hearing. We generally have had a good hearing. There's many times been amendments, but generally the recommendations have gone unscathed back to the finance committee and were generally recommended as is, and then we went to conference, and whatever we've seen has been the outcome. So that's the way it is right now. I would guess because we're coming up against the deadlines, and this doesn't necessarily have to come up against those deadlines, at least in the Senate, that we may not, in fact, have that hearing for a couple of weeks.
Just a brief comment. The White Earth Nation, as did the Fond du Lac tribes, grant funding language contained reverter language. We could pull that land back if it wasn't being used properly, and I still think that this smacks of discrimination. I think that the reasons that have been used by the House are just made up because they don't want to give money to the tribes. And I understand that this is political, and I understand that it's emotional, but it's not right.
Jane?
I appreciate what you said about the SALTA Highway 2 rule, and I will reiterate that I believe it was incumbent on the applicant to bring that forward. I toured the property also, and the discussion that we had on site and the discussion that we had in council on the record were such that there may be a connector trail, there are bike trails involved, that there may be some limited access for disabled folks hunting and things like that. There was never any affirmative claim on continuing to use it for an OHV park, which to me is just bait and switch. So that's a big deal in my opinion.
Okay.
You know, and we could go back and forth forever, but I just want to say I think it's important for folks to go back and look at my original language so they couldn't have any trails in there. And this council changed it to paved trails. So there was an effort. I think we got to be really careful here. Look back. We as a group made a mistake on that project. This is not about a tribe.
No.
This is about other units of government having control of land that we're spending millions of dollars of state money for, and I believe the state should be controlling it. That's the gist of it. And I've worked close with the tribes to try and find a solution that works, and I'm still continuing to do that. But we have to realize this is habitat money. We're supposed to be using it for habitat, and I think the intention was when folks passed it that they assumed that it would be open under regular hunting regulations and that separate units of government wouldn't take the ability to go in and control it differently than what I think was the intent, and my point is that's best done when state government owns it. That's my point.
Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think probably should all move on here. Just so everybody knows, and this is not a nod one way or the other as to the House amendments, but the bill has just now traveled through the House, and it still has to go to the Senate, as Tom was explaining. So it's got a long ways to go. So these discussions will go on. The Senate's got to weigh in on their side yet. So, but as Denny said, we can go back and forth through, I think for quite a while and have these discussions. But they're not over, so we'll end up like we generally do in a conference committee, and that's where the final decision will be made. So there'll be some changes to this as well, I'm pretty sure.
So just we're going to have a discussion on Mississippi Northwoods and Trails later, and I think there's a question of what lessons we can learn from how we did that and should we do things differently to prevent the intent of what we're doing from becoming something else, whatever that might be. So we'll have that discussion separately. Kenny, if you'll go on.
The rest of them, I think I can walk through fairly quickly. Their proposals, there's a Senate file 83 and a House file 84 that I don't think are going to move forward. House file 462. I don't believe that bill is going to be moving at all either. The conservation easement one, House file 1328, is a reaction to a OLA report on conservation easement that makes sense. It's actually a DNR initiative. I think that's relatively non-controversial.
I do have a question on that.
Mr. Chair.
Where does the money sit, and why is there, why should we feel that it is secure in doing what it's intended to do in the long term versus available to the legislature for other purposes if budgets get tight? Because I support the idea, but I worry about the implementation.
If I'm not mistaken, and I do see major conservancy here, I think it allows for the possibility to be set up in an outside organization also, right? Isn't the legislation flexible? It could be, we could use a third
State
party.
State Board of Investments, though.
Okay. I guess I'd have to dig into it deeper, Mr. Chair. That question never came up. I know where you're coming from, and I'm not exactly sure that I know the answer. If future legislatures can grab it, I'm assuming they probably can, as you said. I didn't know. I was thinking that it might allow the ability to go to an outside unit, but it's still in with the state investment, only to have them actually do the monitoring. Okay.
I would encourage you to explore other options because this money needs to be advertised.
Okay. Thank you. The next two bills are extremely controversial, probably more than the discussion we already had. I think there's the other one, there's a definite path to find a way out of. These are the discussion about the payment of TILT on land acquired by Outdoor Heritage money, and the other one is on LCCMR money. I anticipate they will have a hearing in the House. I'm a co-author of Representative Drazdowski's bill. I believe Representative Dill is a co-author. Representative Kahn is a co-author. And there's some other folks are co-authors of the bills. So they deal with where they set up a fund where the money would not only pay for the original purchase of the property, but also Outdoor Heritage money would be used to reimburse counties up front and local units, governments, for the loss taxes they would incur by the public becoming bigger and bigger owners of more and more land. And I think, folks, we could go on forever on that, Mr. Chair. I don't know if you really want to open that up or not.
Well, I think we have to open it up at least a little bit. Yeah. Anyone got comments?
Mr. Chair, I hate to backtrack, but I do have a question still about the previous conversation with the White Earth Reservation proposal. And I wasn't here for any of those discussions. I really don't have enough information to even, you know, make knowledgeable comments or suggestions. What I'm most curious about is this land that is owned by Potlatch, and they are actively marketing 1,500 acres of their forest. And what I've seen, the company that I work for, we do water quality modeling for most of the watersheds in northern Minnesota. What we've seen is when there's a conversion of forests to things like potatoes, it has a tremendous impact on water quality. And I realize that's water quality and this is habitat, but those things are related and there is major impact. And so I'm just wondering about the risk of these acres if they aren't protected through these kind of measures, what's the potential impact, the negative impact to habitat? And is that risk worth taking?
I would encourage members to look at Councilmember Blackburn. You're mentioning the whole thing going on in this region. There's a number of proposals with the Potlatch land. There's the White Earth proposal where Potlatch is identified as working with that parcel to make it be part of public ownership because it's not land suited to be converted to row crop production. There's another proposal that's funded in our, I think it's in our Lizard Sands, not in LCCMR, where the state would, there's a proposal to buy, if I'm not mistaken, also a couple million dollars worth of land from Potlatch to the state of Minnesota. If I'm not mistaken, is it for state forest land? There's a WMA state forest, isn't it? It's forest land. And then there's a third activity ongoing that is Potlatch marketing land, where the highest and best use for Potlatch has been to convert some of this land to row crop. I don't believe Potlatch at this point is pursuing row crop production for either of the two rather large proposals, where the land would go from private ownership to a government unit. But I would encourage folks to look at this whole thing. It's you said 1,500. I think you meant 15,000 acres.
Well,
it's significant acres.
In this proposal, this is, I'm looking at their project plan, and it says 1,500 acres that they're actively marketing.
I think this the wider project is 1,500 acres.
No. Potlatch.
Potlatch is marketing a lot more.
Yeah. Representative Dill can say better than I, but if it's 300,000 acres they own in Minnesota, and they've dumped 50,000 of them already, and if they had their way, they'd be dumping a lot more of them. They don't want to own land with our tax policy in Minnesota. They'd rather own land in Alabama and grow trees down there than in Minnesota, and that's what they're doing.
Jane?
The constitutionality of taking OHF money for non-habitat is a huge concern.
Mr. Chair, we're still talking about acquisition, land acquisition overall in the legislature, right? It was a discussion about that, how they feel or how the legislature feels.
No? Well, I thought we'd moved on to Phil.
Oh, maybe we had. I can talk about either one, I guess. No, if I may, Mr. Chair, there's always the discussion goes on and on and on, as Denny knows, and Representative Bill know about acquisition of land. I sat with a group not that long ago, both senators and House members, and that issue always comes up, taking land out of production. And legacy always gets the finger pointed at them, and that just never goes away. It's always there. I have challenged several of them, and myself included, to find that land that should be sold by the state of Minnesota, bring it to the legislature, and we'll sign on and we'll do it. We have a lands bill every year. I've yet to see any one of those people come forward with any land. So, but it's there. It's always there. Acquisition and management of land is always an issue. Pilt. A lot of good discussion going on about Pilt, I think. And I forget, we talked earlier on about the obligation of what Lizard Sands may be involved in over a 25-year period. And I think at that time when we had a report from Bill, that was like, I think the state of Minnesota was paying $22 million a year. And that might even be biannually, I don't remember. But that was on mark to actually increase by $5 million over a 25-year period. I think that was always the number we through acquisition. So when you look at that figure, it isn't really a whole lot. But there are still angst out there with that, so that doesn't go away.
Elizabeth?
as we move on, I'm thinking there's got to be some takeaways here that will make our decisions in the future a little bit cleaner and better. So maybe Denny and Bill and everyone else can think about the language that we use and the questions that we ask in future hearings and in future grants that address the problems that the legislature is now addressing and is causing the angst. I think that we might have some cleaner language coming through that we could decide on, and certainly at hearings there's some questions that we can ask with proposals that can make this very clear and are on the public record. And the other thing is that relationships with counties, and I know the county that I'm in, are just really a problem, and I'm thinking that when I start asking questions this summer, I'm going to start talking to people about, have you talked to your county commissioners? Have you talked to your township people? I think that's very, very critical as we move ahead, whether or not it's because of PILT and they have anger about PILT payments or whatever it is, we need to open up that communication a little bit better. Some counties believe that we're circumventing the process and it's making this kind of a situation. And I don't, and counties and townships are an arm of the state government, so there's no reason that we aren't communicating with one another. So let's get some good takeaways here and how to proceed a little bit cleaner and better in the future.
So you've got in your packet a schedule I put together, which, you know, my concern about the bill issue, Denny, is twofold. One is the constitutionality, which you and I won't resolve. I don't know whether or not it's within the constitutional mandate of the funds we're doing, and I suspect if this passes, somebody will challenge it and the court will end up deciding that. But the formula that's in the bill is of equal concern to me. Because it calls for 30 times current taxes. And if you do the math, which is what is on the sheet that I put together, the math shows that that's far in excess of what it would take to reimburse the counties for what their actual costs are. The State Board of Investment uses a 5.5% annual distribution figure for any funds that they manage, like LCMR. Which leaves you needing about 17 times current amounts to equal the same amount of money that the counties are currently getting. And 30 times is almost double what it would take to make the counties whole. And that seems unfair and unreasonable to me. And you know, I don't know what's going to happen with this, but I think if it's going to go forward, it should be reasonable and fair, and the current formula doesn't make sense to me. Because it actually gives the counties more money to have land taken out of private ownership than keeping it in.
The only thing I would say, Mr. Chair, is your analysis doesn't take into account inflation, and I think that was the idea of going farther than what you're saying, but that certainly will be a discussion, and I would agree with you that I think 30 seems to be too high.
I mean, the State Board of Investment's 5.5% assumes they can do better than that in managing the funds and keep the purchasing power of the principal at the same level and still make that distribution. In some years they can, in some years they can't, but on a long-term average, they've been able to do that. So I just pass that on as a concern that the formula itself may have some flaws in it. But I think the constitutionality will be challenged if this goes through, and none of us are smart enough to know. We can all have opinions, but none of us actually to decide. You want to go on?
Mr. Chair, the only one left is the governor's buffer proposal in the House. It's House File 1534. Representative Parkelson, a producer from South Central Minnesota, is carrying the bill for the governor in the House. It's had a hearing in our House Environment Finance Committee. I think it was last Tuesday night. We had about a three-hour presentation on the bill. It's in need of a lot of work yet, but I think this group's funding certainly was mentioned as possibilities to help implement the proposal in whatever form it could have in the future.
Okay. I was given a list by Mark this morning of some technical corrections as well. Do you want to cover those, or just is the council interested in language corrections in the bill that have mathematical corrections? There are a few you'd like to know, Ron. The total in the bill was listed at $1,008,000, and it's really $999,386. So there's a correction to just adjust the amount. There is one of the items online on page 9 had the math wrong. The total amount wasn't listed. One of the subcategories in the amount was listed as the total amount, so it corrects from a listed $961,000 to $3,003,002, which is what we approved, but the language got messed up when someone put it together. There is a piece on page 11, line 13, which adds to acquire interest in land in permanent conservation easements for fish, wildlife, habitat, and Minnesota statutes. It was just, it's standard language that didn't make the bill, so it was added in. Page 16. It corrects an amount for administration. It was listed at $1.480 million, and it really was $858 for administration. I think the issue there was 1 year over two, and it's just a mistake in the math. The LCC doesn't need $15,000 for a website, so they've asked that it be taken out. So page 17 deletes that. Page 18 deletes some language but adds conservation grazing under a management plan that is being implemented prior to an emergency declaration may continue. That's a clarification that was brought up so that you can't have an emergency declaration and then bring in a bunch of grazing plans in response to the emergency declaration. If there are existing grazing plans, you can follow through on them, but you can't create new ones just because there's an emergency declaration. And there's another thing related to grazing on page 22 that's a technical correction. Okay. Do you want any more detail on those, Ron? Okay. Any other questions on the bill? All right. Next on our agenda is item number 7, Critical Shoreland Habitat Protection Program. This is a request.
Real quickly, I'm sorry. Before we move on, so those both issues are going to be dropped for somebody to have them amended in the bill.
That's right.
Yeah.
I'm sure that the House has probably already seen those introduced, and you'll see the same. So this is from the Minnesota Land Trust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is Chris Larson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Land Trust, and with me is John Brosnan, our Director of Land Protection. Thanks for hearing this project we have coming forward, and welcome to the new members as well. The issue really at hand and why we're here in front of you today is we have a project in which it's already been on the project list, 340 acres up on the Sucker River, Lake County. Many of you were there a couple years ago on one of the Alpha Heritage Fund tours. fabulous project, fantastic forest, mile and a half of trout stream, you know, the type of perfect conservation easement we're looking for on the North Shore. The issue is, as we got into doing our due diligence, we recognized that there are two existing state trout stream easement, access easements on the property, one from 1966, I think, and 77. So older trout stream access easements, and this bumped into the lands and public domain issue for the Outdoor Heritage Council. And so we are here today in front of you because we would need to move forward on the project and complete the conservation easement. We would need a vote, a affirmative vote of 9 members of the council to be able to move forward. And it's a two-part test, really, for the lands and public domain issue, and that is that we need to demonstrate that this has additional benefits to the conservation and to the habitat that's there, and then of course it needs the vote of 9 of you to move forward. The general will get into the specifics on the project, but the easements, the state easements themselves cover less than 5% of the property, and so it really is a minor portion, and we think that this has outstanding conservation benefits, but we're looking for this approval for this project. But also, this isn't the last time we're going to see this issue, especially as we're working on North Shore trout streams, that we'll bump into areas where there might be older trout stream easements here or a lot of our work in southeast Minnesota as well. And so this project is coming forward from the Crystal Shorelands Habitat Protection Program that we've had two phases of funding that's been recommended by the council. The first one we've completed already, and that we completed over really about a third more than we anticipated in terms of the overall acreage we wanted to do there. And then this current proposal is going forward. We have 4 projects done. I think we're about two-thirds of the way towards our goal of 700 acres. This project would get us over the acreage goal, and we still have more to go. So we have a number of projects lined up as well. So this is essential to help us meet those goals, but we have others coming behind this project as well. So we're excited about the potential. We have a lot of great projects coming forward. This is one of them, but we need to kind of get over the hurdle here of the issue of the access easements. So with that, John, I'll turn it over to you.
And just for new members and those of you that don't remember, one of our guidelines is that we're not going to spend money on land that's already protected. So the question with this project is it already protected? And there is an easement over it which gives it a very limited amount of protection, which I think you'll describe, but the reason we're hearing this is because of the existing protected status that a portion of this property has.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I could add to that, again, we'll be seeing this on other projects, so I think seeking not just approval but guidance from the council really on how we should address these as we move forward with other projects, it'll help us in discussions with landowners so we can give them some assuredness that as we move forward that this is the type of project that might be approved by the council and give us an idea about the whole class about the types of projects moving forward.
Sue, you have a question before we hear the presentation?
I do. So just to confirm, currently there are access easements on 5% of the land that you're looking at getting the conservation easement. So 95% of the parcel has nothing.
Correct.
And the other part is just an access easement and not any kind of conservation easement.
Correct, yep. And the issue is we want to go ahead and put an easement over all of that rather than just segment out the DNR trout stream easements for a couple of reasons. One, just if it's a lot easier in terms of title, also there's additional protective benefits. However, the access easements are first in, so they would stay in place. We just blanket over the top of that.
Go ahead quickly, because I don't think this is a fair thing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members and staff. I've been very grateful for the help in this and presenting today. So this, as Chris mentioned, this project is on the approved project list under Critical Shorelines 2, and it was proposed for protection for its outstanding forest habitat, aquatic habitats, and scenic values. So it is located on the Sucker River. It's about 20 miles north of downtown Duluth. So it is in an area where it's just south of here. There is a number of 5 to 10 acre residential parcels, and this presents a unique opportunity for us to protect the property of 340 acres. It is adjacent to an existing DNR aquatic management area. And so in order to maintain that high-quality forest that keeps the Sucker River a high-quality trout stream, we are proposing to place a conservation easement over the entirety of those 340 acres. It is a very high-quality upland forest. It includes a mix of pines and northern hardwoods. It also, according to the landowner, has the state record largest yellow birch on the property, which I have seen, and it's pretty impressive. But overall, the undeveloped nature of this property protects habitat for a long list of species and greatest conservation needs. I could go through them all, but bald eagle, peregrine falcon, there's nesting red-shouldered hawk in the area, oriole owl, black bear, gray wolf, bobcat, fisher, marten, and moose. So the existing state-held easements, as we just discussed, provide public access for trout fishing and extend a very limited quantity of feet either side the stream bank. And so in this case, beyond the access, essentially they provide pretty limited conservation protections that are confined to a narrow quarter of the property, totaling just less than about 5%. So if our test here is to prove that this project would add direct benefit to the habitat protections that are already in place, as well as encumber protections for the rest of the property, we believe it meets that test and both complements and strengthens the existing protections that are in place. So what we're proposing are to limit agricultural, residential, and commercial uses, prevent industrial uses and subdivision of the properties, and we'll be requiring a habitat management plan for the property as well. The University of Minnesota already conducts white pine research plots on this parcel, and once our easement is completed, we would then have the obligation to monitor and enforce this easement permanently into the future. So overall, again, the goal for us is to maintain the quality trout habitat on the Sucker River by keeping that forest cover intact that's going to maintain those cold water conditions that keep the trout there. From a financial point of view, looking at this, it's important to know that the current landowner was not paid anything for these existing trout stream easements. From 1966 and 77, they were prior to the current landowner's ownership, and in one case, when the property went tax forfeit was when the easement was placed on the property. This will be a bargain sale for us. We have a completed and final appraisal that valued the easement at $237,000, and we are proposing to pay $170,000 to the landowner. We do have a signed purchase option agreement already in place for that. So that's about 72% of the appraised value. So there will be a significant donation here of about $67,000. Again, this is encumbering the trout streams, affecting just 5% of the property against that a donated value of about 30%. We think this is a pretty good deal. I did make sure that the appraiser in this case paid special attention to the existing encumbrances on the property, but his professional opinion was that that was negligible to the value of the easement, in that existing township zoning is more stringent for buildings and removal of vegetation along that river corridor. So the existing township zoning is more stringent in its protections than the existing trout stream easements. So, in conclusion, we do feel like this meets that direct benefit test of adding additional protections to the existing habitats, protections as well as across the entire property. And as Chris mentioned, this is something that comes up both in the north along the North Shore, and we are seeing the same issue with some landowners' properties in the southeast.
So, I think we'll stand for any other questions.
And move to approve. I'd like a future discussion on the different types of easements so that we could be maybe be proactive in terms of working with that limitation that we do have, so that we don't do double dipping, but we don't worry about what we're really not.
Okay. No request.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? You got your vote.
Thank you.
Vote for sex and land.
All right.
Super honest. Thank you. Next is the accomplishment plan amendment, DNR Aquatic Habitat Program. Go ahead, introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, council members, for the record, my name is Martin Jennings. I'm the Fisheries Habitat Program Manager with Minnesota DNR, and with me, Amanda Hillman, who is the Restoration Coordinator at DNR in Fergus Falls. We're We're here today to request an amendment to the DNR Aquatic Habitat Phase 4 appropriation. We're requesting a shift of $30,000 in salary funds from the Stream Habitat Coordinator position to the capital equipment budget category in order to purchase real-time kinetic GPS survey equipment. Since the creation of the position and the approval of the original accomplishment plan, this equipment has come down in price to allow it to become standard practice for surveying work. Purchasing this equipment will greatly enhance the efficiency and capabilities of the Stream Habitat Coordinator to do project design and ensure the projects are built and function according to plans. The Stream Habitat Coordinator position works on multiple outdoor heritage funded projects across appropriations and is funded by approved accomplishment plans from Minnesota Lofts 2012 and 2014 through June 30th of 2018. This amendment would result in improvements in efficiency and the type of work that can be done under these appropriations. A minor part of the amendment request also corrects rounding errors in the output table that were the result of the new online recording system. So with that, we'd be glad to take questions. Ms. Hillman can answer detailed questions about the work that's being done in the equipment.
How do you get by with $30,000 less for salary?
Currently, we have the position funded through 2018, and I think the trade-off in the efficiency that we're going to get from the equipment is worth the trade-off. We will continue, as long as there's projects to do, I think the position is necessary. The workload requires somebody to do all coordination, attend meetings. So we'll continue to seek funding once that 2018 window closes. We seek funding every 2 years to continue the position. So, like I said, as long as there's projects to be done, there's a workload to fill that.
How long will this equipment be used under this grant for the money that's been appropriated in 2012?
Under this appropriation?
Mm-hmm.
It'll be used through the duration of this appropriation. We are currently finalizing construction plan sets. So the equipment would be used during construction. We work closely with the contractors to make sure they're implementing the plans that we designed. And then we also use the equipment to do an as-built survey when the project is finished.
And what happens to the equipment at the end of that period?
It'll continue to be used on the SARD-funded project.
So this is really a request for this and future projects?
Yes.
Other questions? Jane, you look like you have questions. Elizabeth?
I'm wondering about this equipment and other equipment that are dedicated to future projects that this council approves and the legislature, of course, fund. How is that designated? Is there a special category you have? Is it a labeling that you do on the piece of equipment? How can you make certain that in the future it would be used, these long-term items that you purchased, that they would be used on projects funded by through this process?
For me personally, I've labeled all the equipment that I've ordered as LSARD SAMs. LSLHC is on every piece of equipment that we use.
Jane?
Have you used similar equipment on non-OHF projects? Do you have similar equipment? Are people trained on it?
We do not have similar equipment to this. We have a more basic version, but it's a lot less efficient and a lot less accurate in the data collection.
This would be a first for the department?
Not for the department, for our program, yes.
What's the pleasure of the council?
So, I'll move to approve it.
Discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll measure some water.
Item 9, Forest for the Future. Go ahead. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Richard Peterson, Forest Legacy Coordinator with Minnesota DNR. And item 9 pertains to a project, the Upper Mississippi Project, the UPM Land and Conservation Easement that was funded by Outdoor Heritage Funds and closed in 2010. At the time we acquired the easement, there were a number of pre-existing road easements, including easements owned by Itasca County. And the reason we're bringing this item to the council, just for new members' information, is that the council rules and procedures require council approval for actions that result in either a conversion of habitat or a conveyance of land or interest in lands funded in part or in whole by council or OHA funds. In this particular issue, Itasca County is proposing two road projects that would reconstruct portions of county highway and a county state aid highway, resulting in some additional impacts to land not covered by their pre-existing easement. So there is one correction in your letter or your memo that you provided to the council members here. Project 1, you indicate the new easement would affect 3.62 acres. That number should actually be 1.62 acres. The total project or the total acres impacted would be 3.62, but that includes 2 acres of existing easement. The second project, road easement. The road easement, the total footprint of the road easement would be 3.62 acres in Project 1. However, we already have, or the county already has an existing easement covering 2 acres. The new footprint would add an additional 1.62 acres. The new standards for the roads are somewhat wider roads, somewhat wider right-of-ways. And again, in the second project would similarly impact additional acres, and in this case, 3.27 acres of additional footprint would be added to the road easement that they currently have. The amount that would be paid to the council has been prorated based on the dollars provided by the Outdoor Heritage Funds, and those numbers are provided, and they are accurate. Approximately $771 in the first project, and approximately $1,774 for the second project would be reimbursed to the Outdoor Heritage Fund, which is 32% covered. Sue?
I have a question. It seems to me that the impact on the habitat around the road is a lot greater than a couple hundred dollars. And I think this was originally a Trust for Public Land project. Is anybody from TPL here that can give some comments on...
Not this one.
This is the other one?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I still have the question of the easement. Having that road go through, isn't that going to have a bigger impact on the habitat in the area?
Well, again, these are, Mr. Chair members, these are existing roads, so this is not a new highway, this is not a new road, this is a pre-existing road that is being reconstructed, and so that corridor has been there, you know, for a long, long time. The corridor will be widened slightly to account for the new road standards, so there will certainly be a slice of forest impacted, but beyond that, you know, that existing corridor will not change. I mean, it's not like taking a forest and putting a brand new road right through the middle of a forest. It won't fragment
or had any additional impacts in that regard.
Move approval.
Sure, discussion.
I think there are some. There is research on width of road and impact on wildlife, particularly crossing that road. Are you aware, or can someone bring that information to us? Because I do believe, particularly in the west and northwestern part of the United States, they've done quite a bit of study on that and on movement of corridors, and that width of road is has a direct relationship to movement of wildlife. And and that's the question I don't know that I have enough information to act on this appropriately or vote on this appropriately. And I'm also wondering if we aren't opening ourselves up to all sorts of other road improvements when we do something like that. Not only width of road, but maybe there'll be a paving of a road or there'll be something else coming along. I'm afraid of that old term we use called slippery slope. So can somebody address these concerns?
So, Elizabeth, I'll help with this. If we don't approve this, the county will condemn the land, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. So you're absolutely right. The wider the road, the more impact on wildlife. There's virtually nothing we can do to stand in the way other than forcing a legal process, which the result would be approximately the same thing. We can't stop the road.
Follow up?
Sure.
Does that mean that when we put language into a grant and the person agrees, or the county or anybody agrees to that, that it can be trumped by condemnation procedures?
The state or local units of government have the right to condemn. They have to compensate for that based on fair market value. I've had property taken by the state when they widened the highway, and you can stand in their way, you can do a lot of things, and in the end, they take the land, and then you go to court, and 3 years later, they decide whether or not the amount that they offered you is the right amount and send you a check. There just is... you don't want to hear it, but that's the way it works.
Mr. Chair, so my understanding of when they're doing road development, redevelopment, reconstruction like that is it's often to meet safety standards. And from my background in working with wetlands, we try to avoid and minimize as much impact as possible. So I'm assuming those discussions have already happened, and they've probably aligned the road as best as they could in order to have the most minimal impact. But in order to accommodate safety requirements, this seems like it must be necessary. All of those types of activities have happened so far, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I move. Did you already move?
He moved.
Okay, got it.
Any other? I'm sorry, Elizabeth, to be the realist here. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Next, Mississippi Northwoods Habitat Complex Protection. This is related to the issue Denny brought up earlier with trails. And we do have another testifier, Mark Legal, the Land Services Director. Please go ahead.
Mr. Chair, council members, good morning. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to appear before the council and give you an update on activities at the Mississippi Northwoods property. To my right is Dan Lista. He's a policy analyst with our department. We had anticipated having Jake Free here, who is a forester, natural resource manager, who directly manages this property. He called me at 5 a.m. this morning to say he had the flu, so you've got me. I'm the land services director for Crow Wing County, which includes our public land management division. As recommended by the council and appropriated by the legislature, the Northwoods property was acquired in fee to be added to the county forest system in 2012. When acquired, the property contained approximately 21 miles of existing roads and trails and a Grantonade snowmobile trail. These trails and roads continue to exist and continue to be used as multi-use trails, open to motorized and non-motorized uses. Approximately 10 miles of these trails, or 50% of those trails, are what would commonly be thought of as roads, having a width of 10 feet or more. The county has received an application for designation of a multi-use trail system utilizing approximately 13 miles of these existing roads and trails. This is the first application received by the county seeking to designate trails within the Northwoods property. Crow Wing County manages 105,000 acres of forest lands in accordance with sustainable forest management practices, which are dedicated to protecting the integrity and longevity of forest lands and habitat. County forest management practices are certified by both the Sustainable Forest Industry, SFI, and the Forest Stewardship Council. With respect to the Northwoods property, the county is cognizant of the deed restrictions in place, including the constitutional foundation of protecting, enhancing, and restoring habitat for wildlife. As such, the county's management of this forest land will reflect these requirements. As noted in your agenda memo, the county has a five-step process for considering trail proposals on county-managed property. This process was established by the county board in February of 2012 as part of the county's comprehensive recreational trails plan. We have a handout for you that goes through this process that lists the steps of the process that we'll distribute at this time. The project, Okay, the project is currently in the second phase of this multi-step process. And that is the process of the stage of staff evaluation that includes a detailed examination of the environmental and community impacts of the proposal, applying specific criteria to the proposal that relates to our sustainable forest management practices, and also discussions with key stakeholders who have an interest in the property or specific knowledge about the property. This process is a lengthy process. We anticipate it taking up to 9 months or more. The next step of the process is our more formal public review process. This involves a public comment period, 30-day public comment period. In the past, we have extended that for particularly for projects that people have a keen interest in. We accept written comments on the proposal, trail proposal, and then we provide written responses to all the comments. So it's an opportunity for our community, our local community, members of our community, as well as any other stakeholders or interested parties to submit formal comments, which are then replied to. And those comments and replies are put up on our county website and made available to our policymakers, our elected county board of commissioners. After that process, that formal public process and review process and response, we then go before an advisory committee that the county has for managing our public lands. This is our Natural Resource Advisory Committee. We do have a member of that our Natural Resource Advisory Committee in the audience today in case any members have questions about their role. He was also involved in this initial process of acquiring this property. After it's been reviewed by the advisory committee, which consists of citizens, DNR officials, forestry, private forestry industry officials, as well as folks from our community college, county commissioners, after they review it, it goes to the county board for their consideration. If it is approved by the county board, it could be modified, it could be rejected, it could be approved as submitted. It would then, this particular application is a Grantonade application, so it would then go to the Department of Natural Resources for their seven-step review process as well. So that's just a brief summary of what our process is, and we're happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Questions?
We have the county's perspective on this, but I noticed that there is an organization, there is a group that has some concerns. Are we going to hear from them?
We are going to hear from them.
Ah, very, very
expected. There might be a desire to hear from them.
And my question is, there's a lot of paper here. What I would like to know is what changes exactly the number of miles and the width and the use. What changes from when you were initially given the grant to what you want to see? What are your exact changes?
We don't anticipate any changes on the ground in terms of changes to the existing trail. As we go through this process and evaluate, and the forest managers look at them, there could be some improvements that are made for with respect to erosion or other issues. But we have done an examination of all the native plant community out there, so that's a relevant consideration as well. But we don't anticipate any of the objective or the proposal, which we are considering, is to use existing trails. It doesn't involve any alteration of them. It is our hope that we could, through this process and through the input that we receive and the examination, get a more designated, managed system of trails in there rather than what currently is an unmanaged, undesignated system of roads and trails. So that would be our objective. It's something our county board has said they want to achieve in our forest land. So that's one of the objectives we hope to achieve. That would be different than what's there now.
Jane?
What I want to see right now is what graphics we had and maps and overheads that we had at the time of approval versus what this vote, what this plan is. So, I don't have my binder from 2 years ago.
Come on.
I don't. Well, I have it at home, too, but I didn't bring it. And so I'd like to see how this differs from what was contemplated and discussed during our meetings.
So, Mr. Chair, to that point, what you have in front of you is one of the management activities we've done on the property since acquisition is the log and map and GPS these trails, existing roads and trails. So that's what you see before you.
But that wasn't done at the time of the application.
That's correct.
Bill, Mr. Chair, is this the point in time where we're talking about ATVs, trail usage?
This would be part of that discussion.
Okay. Mr. Chair, to the testifiers, on this map here, I don't see or can you identify the trails or the projected trails? And are we talking about trails just going through the park, or are we talking about ATV trails that are going to be more of a ATV park, if you will, type situation? Because I know we talked about this some years ago, about whether the trails were actually just going to go through or go along the edge, and actually when we toured the property, beautiful piece of property, but we were talking about that. Can you give me an idea about what kind of ATV trails you're talking about, what kind of usage?
The map before you does not have the proposed trail network. It has the existing trails on the property. The proposal we received would utilize approximately half of those trails. Almost all of the actual roads, approximately 3 miles of the trails out there that are not 10 feet wide. The term ATV park is not something we use or something we envision. What we envision is, as our county board has advised us from a policy perspective, getting to a place where we're designating and managing trails, and we're hopeful that this process will allow that to happen, us to get there in a broad way with a lot of collaboration, and then if that happens, if the DNR through its process approves it as a you know, if it even gets that far, two stages through the county board, and the DNR does approve the grant aid, that provides funding for groups to manage it, to enforce it, to manage the trail, have a presence on the trail. It's not proposed as an ATV trail. It's proposed as a multi-use trail. The county has a system of, which our county board has established, a system of trails in our forests are open to motorized use unless posted closed. So that's different than the state policy. So currently, all those trails are open for motorized use, and this proposal hopefully would allow us to go in there and manage it more effectively.
Paul, if I could, Mr. Chair. So you recall the discussions, or maybe you were here or not. I'm not sure.
You know, I was not here. Sorry.
Okay. Well, somebody recall the discussions with regards to the ATV use and what concerns we had as a council on the usage of them. And it appears, or at least the word is, that throughout the halls of St. Paul now, that this is going to be used as a, and it is being pegged as an ATV park, whether you know we like that or not. There certainly seems to be a pretty defining difference between a trail going straight through property versus driving all over it. I certainly am concerned about that. I know other legislators are, as well as other members on the committee. So hopefully we can get to the bottom of this and answer the other members' questions. Sue?
I'm looking at this. This one was apparently done in an accomplishment plan back in 2012, which was before I was here. There's a reference in the DNR's memo about what the original project sponsors thought about some of this. I'm really concerned about the wildlife displacement and the issues that are here, and I'm kind of horrified at the number of trails that are in this piece of property. Since I wasn't here before, is there anybody from the original grant requesters, which I think was TPL, that could give us more information about what they were thinking about when they got this project?
TPL here? Susan's here. Yes. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the council, my name is Susan Schmidt. I'm the trust for Public Lake. Should I
answer? Go ahead and answer the question.
Sure, thank you. Councilmember Folsom, as many of you know, except the new members, the Trust for Public Land was the lead organization in the proposal for funding for protection of Mississippi River Northwoods habitat conflicts. That was back in June 2011. We have reviewed the proposal that's in front of the county for an ATV trail system that was submitted to the county, as Mark said just recently. And we do not believe that the proposal is consistent with the intent of the proposal that we put in or the subsequent appropriation language in Session Laws 2012. We furthermore believe that the proposal called for a management plan with local input that needs to be completed as proposed. So I'll stop there, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Does that answer your question? Mm-hmm. Brian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I vaguely remember our discussion about this because I was a big fan of seeing what we could do to preserve a unique piece of the Mississippi River. And I also vaguely remember we had discussions about these trails, and it didn't seem to me there was any discussion about multiple trails. There was a discussion about where would a trail go if there would be one. So I have to tell you, I'm totally shocked by what I'm seeing here. And if this had been before us, and I was on the council, if this had been before me back then, I would have voted no.
Okay.
I was
going to say just about the same thing, Ron. I accept what you're saying, that the yellow trails were not graphed and mapped. You know, I went up there on a Saturday. I think they set up a tour for us, or it was a Friday. And the state rep, John, I guess he said, John, he was there, and there were some really beautiful maps in the conference room, and there were probably 20 people. We had a couple of trucks. And, yeah, there was one of the main trails that in the main gate that we went in. You know, we went all the way out to the middle point there that's on the north. And, you know, the vistas all the way along are amazing. I mean, it's an absolutely stunning piece of property. But, you know, I'm somewhat acquainted with working with internet projections and maps and planning. And just as Ron said, there was no way it was represented anything like this. There were a couple of trails, and they were primarily to be for access and for safety and firefighting and for access for disabled hunters. It was not going to be this kind of an extensive trail. And I don't know, all the yellow ones, I mean, you know, you can go and GPS a deer trail. That doesn't make it a road or a path even. You know, I've navigated the woods enough to know that. And there's just no way that anybody would call this the kind of project. Well, I can speak for myself. I would never have approved it as submitted now.
Danny?
Mr. Chair, to Councilmember Kingston's point, ATV trails, once an ATV trail is determined by an ATV having gone down it, it's an ATV trail. So any of these yellow lines, I would imagine the county has determined that it's clear that an ATV has driven down it. That becomes an ATV trail then.
Well, that doesn't give it any credibility in my mind. Somebody went in there and roared around on one. That doesn't make it an okay thing.
Mr. Chair and Councilmember Kingston, I didn't say it was an okay thing. I was saying in Minnesota law, it's an ATV trail. Mr. Chair, I guess I would like to ask TPL if they knew that Crow Wing County, it's clear that they're located south of Highway 2, did they know that their county forest wasn't open unless marked closed county when they presented the project to us? I believe they supported it at B&A County Forest, and were they aware that even though it's located south of Highway 2, did you know that Crow Wing County was an open, unless marked closed county?
Mr. Chair, members of the council, again, my name is Susan Schmidt. I'm with the Trust for Public Land. Representative McNamara, I'm going to have to go back through our files, but my memory is that we did know it, and that the county, that is why the proposal, which was ultimately for county ownership, called for the management plan that would rely on local input. And furthermore, it was my understanding that the county had agreed to code to post no ATVs 1 month after we closed on the property.
Mr. Chair, this is a mess. I didn't expect you to say that. You actually now and the county are acknowledging that you both knew that all these ATV trails would be open to ATVs because that's the law. North of Highway 2 and Crow Wing County has adopted that and are allowed under law that their county forests are open unless marked closed. I think we have to go back to the tape and look at where the discussion ever was that all 24 of these miles were open unless closed immediately after the transaction. Most of us on this council had no idea that ATVs would be allowed here. And I don't ever remember on the discussion on the tape that all these ATV trails would be open. Now, I know the people in Crow Wing County wanted this land, not for habitat, but they wanted it for a bike trail. And I fought long and hard to have that discussion be transparent. The only thing I could get was that paved trails needed this council's approval. So if you're telling me you snuck in all 24 miles of ATV trails, get to stay there, I am really wondering what in the world happened. At this point, a very deep breath might be a good place to take it. and try and understand, because this is getting to look uglier and uglier every day. And I'm sorry, members, but I put on the tape so much of this was going to happen as it developed, and no one stepped forward to help stop this from happening. And this is why the other projects are where they are. Because when we give this authority away to somebody, I can't believe that you actually knew these were open, and nowhere did we get testimony about ATVs. We talked about a bike trail and how we were going to get compensated if it was a paved trail. My guess is you intend to put a 2-mile bike trail in and put it with recrushed blacktop and roll the daylights out of it, and you'll be able to run your kid's stroller on it. You won't even need our permission for that either. We were completely misled. Completely misled. It was a gross injustice. And you, the county knows that I've been so PO, and TPL knows I'm totally frustrated. We finally put into law that you can't do what you did there, and I'm just... And that's in regards to how you get compensated. Council members, just so you know, we're stuck. They got 24 miles of trails they're running on today, and there's an adjoining off-road motorcycle park right next door to it. You can see what this is. So if you want to wonder why I'm concerned about other land purchases by other units of government, this is a glowing example.
Sue?
Wow. You know, wow. I don't think we're quite to the level of something like fraud, but you definitely pulled the wool over the council's eyes. This is a great example why probably every project should have a reverter clause in it, because you shouldn't have that land and you shouldn't have gotten OHF funds to get it. And I'm shocked. I'm just shocked.
So I think one of the things that's concerning to me beyond what's been expressed is that the accomplishment plan actually calls for a project management team to do their work, and I don't think that's happened, and that's not reasonable. You have an obligation under the agreement to have a project management team steer and guide this project. Do you have that report for us? Is it done? Or am I don't think it is. Is it done?
The project management plan in your packet is the project management plan that exists.
Were the team members that were identified, did they develop that?
No, it was developed at the beginning of the when the acquisition was under consideration. It was given to Becca Nash of the TPL, and we do work with our natural resources advisory committee, our citizen panel, to go through these management plans.
No, but your accomplishment plan with us states our project management team to help steer and guide this project consists of, and then there's a long list of people. Did they do their report?
I'm not certain.
I would like to see that report.
We will get back to you on that. Let me just address a couple of points that were raised. So first of all, the county is not advocating this proposal. This is a proposal that was submitted to us for just this reason, for vetting, for study and evaluation. So that's the context of this. Nothing has happened. The county has gotten this proposal. We have a process for vetting it and going through it. In terms of the trails that are out there, Jake Free, who was the forester who GPS those trails, I can assure you they're not deer trails. He could speak to the specificity of that if he were here, but they are existing trails that are being utilized out here, and they were on the ground at the time. Kirk Titus was the person for the county that was here. We were asked to present a couple weeks ago. He's on vacation. He would have some direct knowledge of that. Dan did go through testimony and has looked at the records, and he can speak to some of that, some of those issues.
If I could, Mr. Chair, to Representative McNamara and Councilmember Olson's points, I listened to all the tape regarding this, all the record on this, and Representative McNamara is correct. The largest amount of concern and discussion before this council was concerning the bike trail, the potential linkage of the paved trail, the Paul Bunyan Trail, and the Triangle Lakes Trail. To date, that's not part of this proposal. Nothing has materialized in terms of that. That's where the language in the appropriation came from, stating that that is an alteration of intended use. With regards to, you know, pulling the wool over the eyes or something, I don't know that that's accurate. As you may remember, the county was brought in as the eventual owner of this land and fee at the sort of end of the process. It was when the deliberations were occurring, the ownership wasn't really settled at that point. It was unclear who would own the property in the end. And what was resulted was you know, to be given to the county fee to be managed as county forest land. So in my recollection and my review of tape, I don't recall the issue of ATV trails and these existing trails that were on the property. I don't recall that issue being heavily discussed outside of the bike trail issue.
Okay.
The county has authority to post trails as not being open. And that would go a long way, in my opinion, to solve some of what we're talking about here today and get on the same page. I appreciate learning about the legality of it now, 2 years later. However, I believe that any applicant has the affirmative responsibility and onus to tell us exactly what the plan is. Otherwise, we're operating in the dark, and that just doesn't make any sense. I appreciate that this has not been approved and that you're here to take some heat over it, but my expectation would be that the accomplishment plan that our chairman just referenced be worked upon with involvement from the council, and that there become some sort of a collaborative process to limit access using the authority that the county has, since they got this tremendous gem from the state with certain intent behind it. And I think that most taxpayers wouldn't argue with all of what's been said here today.
Julie, and then we're going to move on. We've got other people to talk to this, and we're running behind schedule.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As far as the posting, Ms. Schmidt says, if that was true that they asked the county to do that, I have a significant question about why that didn't happen. And I'm also just curious, as far as this trail proposal and planning process, there's a feasibility study that goes on, and I'm just a little curious as to why it's even gotten this far, because it shouldn't be feasible.
If you're looking to me to answer the question, I don't have that answer.
You know, from the county's perspective, per the appropriation, this was appropriated as county fee land. County fee land is managed under a forest management plan, which is also subject to our comprehensive recreational trails proposal, which is the process you see before you. So from the county's perspective, we are managing this county forest land, thus any trail application on the Northwood would be subject to that same review process.
Mr. Chair, I understand that. However, these are outdoor heritage ponds, and there is a law of the state about how these are to be used, and I believe that actually takes some precedent.
Councilmember Blackburn, you're correct. I mean, this is a constitutionally charged provision. And what that charge was to protect this land in fee as forest land. We don't necessarily feel that designation of a trail on existing trails could be change the intended use. I mean, it's consistent with the purpose of acquiring it as county forest land.
Okay, we're going to move on. Susan, you want to make?
I do. Mr. Chair, members of the council, I really feel a need, just given that we've been talked about restating what I said when you first called me up, so I'm going to restate it. So thank you. Just to clarify for the record, the Trust for Public Lands was the lead organization on this proposal for funding in June 2011. We have reviewed the proposal that's pending on ATV trail systems that was submitted to Crowley County. We do not believe it is consistent with the intent of the proposals that we put in, nor the appropriation language or subsequent accomplishment plans. Furthermore, in the proposal and the subsequent accomplishment plan, it calls for the county to pull together a management plan for the property with input from local stakeholders. In our view, that has not been completed. And furthermore, according to our project manager, who is no longer with the Trust for Public Lands, the county agreed to post for no ATV trail use a month after we close. Thank you.
Thank you. We have three people who have contacted us wanting to talk about this issue. Mike
thank
Burton.
You.
Thank you. Mike Burton, Gary Drotz, and Greg Kavala.
Mr. Chair, fellow council members, happy to be here today. I have to somewhat admit that I'm here to take my share of lashes, Rick McNamara, on some of the issues here, probably. But my name is Gary Drotz. I was the area wildlife manager when this project was basically being shepherded through. I was a strong advocate for many years trying to figure out how to protect this property and what to do with it. I'm now retired, still active in Crow Wing County. I work with Crow Wing County a lot. I work with the people here. I want to make sure that the information we talk about today, this is not anti-county. As Mark said, the county has a proposal before them that they're trying to process, and this is not ATV. This is about some issues on intent and process that we're going to go through. I want to introduce Greg Qualley. Greg?
Hi, my name is Greg Qualley. I'm a representative here today from Anglers for Habitat, one of the original sponsors of this particular project. Just a little background here for some things that I'm probably going to state. I have an extensive background in real estate management, buying, selling, leasing, and I actually do some work for this council in an appraiser capacity with some of the nonprofit organizations. So that's some of my background. Gary, I think you're going to go over our letter and our major concerns, and I'll make a statement later. Thank you.
Yeah, we want to keep this short to get the question. So we submitted a letter, and I apologize for Mike Burton and with the conflict. As far as Mike was born and raised on the actual banks of the Mississippi River, Brainerd, and was heavily involved with Ducks Unlimited, retired back to Brainerd, so that's his involvement, but he had a conflict with it. So you have in your packet, there was a letter. We tried to frame some of the issues that we had as some of the original project sponsors and project team members that have been talking about. Hopefully we can try to clear up a couple of things here to actually see where things were in intent. I'm not going to go through the letter as a whole. You know, when you get towards it, you'll take and see where a couple of the key points that was brought out is the issue of what was on the property and when it came. As an actual land manager, I admit that we knew potlatch land was logged and very intensively logged. There was a lot of trails and uses that were on that property, and there was use by ATVs, motorbikes, trucks, hunters and fishermen all over that when potlatch land owned it. Then they leased it the last 10 years, and it was only used by those people who were the leasees. So when the property came, I mean, anybody knows anything about forest land management, it came with an infrastructure of access roads and trails that, like all forest land, come with. Okay? What we had in the accomplishment plan is that we wanted to have a project team that's noted in there was going to get together and talk about how the property should best be managed within intent and spirit of the Constitutional Amendment and the funding language. That plan would have been what could have been presented today. I'm one of the old project team members. Greg was on it. Mike was on it. All those different people, the project team members that should have got together and put together that vision for the plan for that piece of property. That plan would then act as somewhat the firewall, I would say, or the actual base of what kind of uses could have went on for the property within the funding intent of work of what's there. Unfortunately, I have to point out in the letter that all the project team members somewhat feel that at the end of the process, you know, some of the steam ran out of what the was there, and the county took over, and the county did submit their project management plan, but unilaterally without talking to any of the project team members. So that's where part of that fell apart. Now it comes down, and we still have basically strong disagreement yet that this is county fee land, though, but you all hopefully have in your packet the deed restriction that came with that. Pretty specifically says that the county cannot convey an interest that's not consistent with the statute language of the OHV land. What we're here to talk about, there is undesignated use going on right now, but as soon as the county designates an ATV use and a system in there, to us that are the, and Greg can speak to this from his stuff of that, it conveys an interest on that property. And we're saying that that interest is not consistent probably with what's there. There needs to be motorized access. There needs to be some trail work in there. But to come along and entertain a single ATV-use trail system at this time is not consistent with the spirit or intent of the law.
I'd just like to add that, just a bit, Chairman and Council members. And I think there was a couple missteps here, and Gary kind of did a mea culpa, and as one of the project sponsors, I'll do a mea culpa too. The day the deed was signed, we should have went right back into the county and said we're ready to help you figure out a vision for this marvelous piece of property. That didn't happen. That doesn't mean it can happen. That means that we're at a point now where it probably really, really needs to happen. And I guess Gary and I are sitting here saying we're willing to do our part here. We're willing to cooperate with the county in order to put a good vision on the ground and a plan for this particular piece of property. We're not against the OHVs by any stretch of the imagination. We do think that hearing a proposal for a trail was a misstep. And maybe it was due to ignorance. We don't know for sure, but we're encouraging, I guess, the council to take a step back here and send us back to do some more work, maybe, on this entire project. So that's.
I think the council's already indicated they'd like a little more work done. Bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for that. I think you're right. But I certainly would encourage, it sounds like that this thing is healable. Is it possible that we can heal up this issue here?
Well,
moving forward, if not, I think you should carry that word very strongly, because I, for one, will not agree with them coming forward with any other proposals in the next 20 years, quite frankly, because this will not be.
And I don't want that to happen personally. I'm a strong advocate of the different types of public land we have in Minnesota, federal, county, state, and the different projects we can do in the future. I don't want this issue to basically taint what's going on in the future. There's some things here that we can do to make this yet a win-win. We just have to back up. What you've seen with the problem is that the county seems to think that it's fee title and whatever that they can do as they see fit right now. I'm personally disagreeing with that interpretation when you look at what was put in for deed restriction and the actual interpretation when they have to grant an easement and they designate that. That, to me, conveys an interest that we're saying is not consistent with intent. There needs to be a better backup in looking at the management intent of the project and what was there.
Chairman Harwell, committee members, I would echo some of what Gary said also, but there's an interesting piece here that was discussed earlier, and it relates to trails on this property. When the planning team got together and discussed this, there was discussions about, well, shouldn't we really decide what's going to happen to this piece of property before we even go through the acquisition process. Big issue was the bike trail. You all know that. ATVs were another issue. Camping, boat accesses, those things were all issues on management of this property that was acquired with the funds. And I think all of us said, you know, at this point in time, that's totally premature. We have the opportunity here to do a plan once the property is acquired and then submit that back to the council and see if it meets approval. So that step was missed. We, I think, acknowledged the fact that there was a whole series of issues out there that needed to be addressed that it just didn't get there. We didn't get there yet, but we certainly can. And I'd echo what Gary says also on working with Crow Wing County. They're one of the more progressive counties as far as land management and resource protection in the state of Minnesota. And I think they can work through this.
great. So I, Ron, I'll let you have the last word. What I would say is, as a council, we need to think about when we do projects, what restrictions we're actually putting in place that would have prevented us from having this discussion right now, which I know, Denny, is something you've talked about. But
thank you, Mr. Chair. I just was going to ask Greg, what kind of, can you give us an opinion on what kind of recourse the council might have if the rowing commissioners decide that they want an ATV park there?
Mr. Chair and Ron, the recourse is you do have a kind of a clawback provision for the land that if it's used for something that was not intended, it's supposed to go back to the state. The issue is going to be how do you do that? Does the council, you know, hire an attorney to work on behalf of the state, or the Attorney General, Commissioner of Natural Resources? You know, who does that? And what process they use. We haven't done that before. And so we have the same language, or similar language, not exactly the same, for LCCMR, for the trust fund. And as far as I know, we've never, I mean, it's been a threat. It's kind of something to hold over people to make sure. But we're not really sure who exactly would bring the case or whatever. It would require a court proceeding to take back the land for the state.
Danny, you don't have the last word.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chamberlain. And thank you for flexibility to the testifiers. Thank you both for coming down. I know you're in a difficult position. What it is important for the council members to know, the County of Crow Wing and its residents do know what was acquired as a county forest. And the vast majority, I would say, of the constituents in Crow Wing County look forward to using this as a multi-use property. That's not what this group envisioned, and arguably many of us were sleeping at the punch when we let happen what happened. I appreciate looking to say maybe there's an option for us to get this back. The reality is I don't know that that's true, but this council in the end is probably going to want to wash its hands of whatever ATV use happens on this property, because if we start buying Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage property and allowing ATVs, we are not following the Constitution. And we may have done it in this instance and may not be able to do anything, because it's now ruining county's land and they got 24 miles of trails. And my guess is this weekend there's going to be a lot of ATV use. And to Councilmember Olson's point, it's not consistent with habitat, but it is what happened, and we are where we are. We can talk about all the options, but I think this group's going to want to wash its hands of letting this happen. And I do not want to ever approve an accomplishment plan that says ATVs aren't abused on this land. You can do it without even asking. That's not you, but the county knows they can. And if we go approving an accomplishment plan, and I don't know that we're going to prove anything, Mr. Chair, by trying to legally, because I've already looked at the legal aspects and they're pretty limited.
Thank you all. Thanks for coming down.
Thank you
for coming down.
Thank you, council members.
We'll move on to item 11, accomplishment plan amendment, Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Neil Feakin. I manage the Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project for the Nature Conservancy here in Minnesota. I'm here today to request your consideration of three additions to the Prairie Recovery Project Phase 3 parcel list. The first is an addition to the Regal Meadows WMA habitat complex in Sandy, Ohio County. And I both think that one's fairly routine. The other two, however, require a retroactive amendment effective June 30th of 2014. And to be quite honest with the council, I'm requesting that to help me fix a fairly significant mistake that I made on our administration of the project.
Maybe I'll just take a moment to go through the narrative of what happened. So both the Bluestem Prairie Edition and the Lake Johanna Esker Edition were on the approved Phase 2 parcel list. And we closed on those properties July 1st and July 6th, 2014, respectively. As we went through the reimbursement process with DNR, we realized that our appropriation period for acquisitions on Phase 2 actually ended June 30th, 2014, and we were informed that we were ineligible to receive reimbursement for those because we were outside of our appropriation period, albeit only by a day and 6 days individually. We talked to DNR significantly to try and figure out how we could remedy this. They suggested that we approach the council and seek this retroactive amendment, place those parcels on the Phase 3 parcel list, and request reimbursement under the Phase 3 reimbursement. The total amount of dollars are about $450,000 for the two parcels together, and I'm here today to answer questions and seek your approval.
Bill? Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. The projects are going along as well as planned, and this is just a day... A couple of day difference here in funding is what you're requesting for.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, we closed on those projects, so the Nature Conservancy owns them today. We have the deed to those. Okay.
Jane?
Were those parcels on a subsequent phase project?
Mr. Chair and members, they were only on the parcel, the Phase 2 parcel list. Had we extended them onto Phase 3, we wouldn't be having this conversation.
So my concern with this is Dakota County did the same thing, and we turned it down, and they had to return the money. And so we've treated one grant recipient one way, and this is a request to treat another one different than that. And Dakota County, the circumstances are a little different, but they missed the deadline and had to return funds. Similar to this. And I think theirs was $350,000. It was $1 million.
And how many days was it late?
The circumstance was that the purchase agreement was signed before the deadline, but the closing took place after. Is that? And so they missed the deadline, and we made them return, the DNR made them return the money, or never authorized the closing on the parcel. So I'm concerned about fairness here, having done that once. If we do that for this group, what's Dakota County going to say?
In deadlines, I guess we've been discussing deadlines a lot the last year, but I know that staff have been really good at getting a hold of people and saying, you know, there's a deadline for this, there's a deadline for that, for reports and on and on. Were you aware? How could you have not been aware of the deadline? I'm sorry, I'm not trying to make fun of you. I'm just wondering, with all of the reminders and things that you have on your list, there was a deadline, and you were aware of that.
Mr. Chair and members, yes, we were aware. Again, it was an oversight on my part. The way we structure our real estate deals is we have a protection staff that puts the deals together, schedules the closing with our legal staff, and I didn't do a good enough job communicating with them when those closings needed to occur, and quite frankly, I didn't realize they were closing July 1st and July 6th. There's no reason they couldn't close the week earlier, and I just missed it, to be honest.
So what do you want to do, members?
I'm going to approve it.
Okay. Any discussion? And you're talking about all three, the accomplishment plan adjustment as well as the two parcels beyond?
As we have discussed and obviously approved it.
Yes. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Oh, no, we can't. It's approved. Thank you.
Next is finalized Native Prairie Bank SNA acquisition in Yellow Medicine County. An update on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Council members. For the record, my name is Peggy Booth, and I am the SNA program supervisor. And I will, I'm sharing this testimony with Dave Shad, our Deputy Commissioner of the DNR. We were asked to come back and follow up on a discussion that the Council had on its November 13th meeting. And this regarded, the discussion on the November 13th regarded an acquisition of a Native Prairie Bank. And I will speak to the status of that acquisition, and then Deputy Commissioner Shad will speak to the work that the department has been doing to look at how we value Native Prairie Bank easements. So specifically, the parcel that was being discussed in November is 160 acres of native prairie that contains a rare wet saline prairie complex as well as habitat for rare species. This 160 acres has been a priority for protection for some time, and it is in Yellow Medicine County. So we, at the time we came to the council, we had an option with that landowner. Subsequent to the council meeting, we decided to cancel the option with the landowner. So we no longer had any deal, if you will, with the landowner to acquire it as a Native Prairie Bank. Prior to our having entered into that option, the landowner had received an offer to acquire the land in fee from the Green Corridors Partnership using Environment and Natural Resource Trust Fund money that was appropriated to the Redwood Area Community Foundation. The landowner then, after we withdrew our option to acquire it as a Native Prairie Bank, went back to Green Corridors and has entered into a purchase agreement to sell the land in fee to Green Corridors. It has been approved by the county board, the Yellow Medicine County Board, and it's expected to close in a couple weeks. After it is acquired, the Redwood Area Community Foundation will donate that land to the DNR, and it will become designated as the Antelope Valley SNA. So we will not be using any outdoor heritage funding for that project. The other thing that the council asked us to do was to look at our process for how we value Native Prairie Banks, and I'll let Deputy Commissioner Shad talk about that.
So, Mr. Chairman, members, again, Dave Shad, Deputy Commissioner with DNR, and you'll recall the reason this came before you was we had a situation where the formula that's described in statute for how we value easements for the Native Prairie Bank program actually calculated a value for that easement that was in excess of an appraisal that was done on that same property. And we had concerns about that. Certainly the council had concerns with that. And so as part of that discussion, We said that we needed to really pull some folks together to take a look at our approach to valuing not only Native Prairie Bank easements, but other easements that we do in DNR and also Board of Water and Soil Resources. And so we have pulled together a group of folks from the two agencies to take a look at all the easement programs that we've got, the valuation approaches that we use for those. Many of those are prescribed in statute. And then also take a look kind of across the country, across various organizations that are purchasing conservation easements to look at options for valuing easements. And of course, here in Minnesota, we've got these formula-based easements. We've also got larger, more complex easements where we use appraisals. There are other approaches that are kind of between those two formula and full appraisal processes that might be a good fit for some of our easement programs. And so we have started to look across all of our programs. We've looked at these options for valuation, and we're now in the process of kind of taking a look at characteristics of easement programs, and based on those characteristics, what valuation process might make sense. So certainly very large easements where the terms of the easement are negotiated with the landowner, a lot of dollars involved with the easement. We certainly want to look at an appraisal process for that. For other easement programs like our trout stream easements, they're very small, narrow easements. We are doing a lot of them. The acreage involved in any easement with an individual landowner is very small. And I think it makes sense to use a formula for that, and we do, and it seems to work very well. So trying to kind of match up kind of characteristics of these easement programs with what we think is an appropriate valuation process to ensure that we can get the work done in an efficient way, but also ensure that the dollars are used in a good way, and that the taxpayers are getting good value. The other thing that we are starting to look at are some best practices associated with some of these valuation methods. And for example, if we are using formulas, I think a best practice would be that we would periodically check and see if the formula is giving us a good valuation. And that might change in different market conditions. And we haven't done that with most of our formulas. We think that would be an important best practice. There's probably other practices out there that we can learn from other entities out there. And so this group will be pulling those best practices together. Our hope is to have some recommendations a year from now, including any statutory changes that we might suggest for those valuation methods that are described in statute. So that's, we did make a commitment when we were here on this Prairie Bank parcel that we were going to pull a group together. We've done that, and I think it's been a really good discussion so far.
Great questions. I'm glad our questions led to a better deal. Stretch that money a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thanks for updating us.
Thank you.
Members, our next order of business is to review the call for funding request, which we need to approve today, and so it can be published and we can meet our timetable for letting project proposers develop their proposals and have the time to do that. If you'll remember, we especially wanted to do that earlier than the field season because when we did it, I think the first year or two, there was a big chunk of it that was summer only, and there were a lot of people who were saying, hey, I kind of like to work in the summer. So it's important for us to get this done today. You were all sent last year's with some suggested changes. I'm going to turn it over to Heather to explain what we're looking at and any of the changes that are proposed or things we should think about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Council. This document will look very familiar. It's essentially the document that a subgroup consisting of Scott Rawl, Susan Olson, and Jane Kingston worked on last year and incorporated those changes at that time. What we've done is just gone through and changed some of the timeliness pieces and made those corrections, but otherwise the document stays relatively untouched. I had spent some time earlier this year going through and incorporating and moving things around and thinking about other ways in which to do this in the way in which we could align it better with the review function of the council. We lost time, or did not have enough time, unfortunately, to do that and pull a group together, but I hope that we can move that forward for next year. There were several items that are included in this packet that were culled from meetings over last year. And as we sat down as a staff and reviewed them, we found that the vast majority of them were not really appropriate for inclusion in the call, but rather should be incorporated in other documents such as status reports or final reports or accomplishment plans. So we'll continue to work on that throughout the year. The last piece is I know that there was a relative level of dissatisfaction with the scoring mechanism that we used last year, so we will continue to work on that and would welcome the input of council members to help us with that. Finally, as a staff, we have also discussed the completion of the online system, and there's one last big chunk of work that we would like to include as a function of that online system, and that is the review function. So we have begun a conversation with Houston Engineering, who will be working with us to develop a module that will allow council members direct access to the online system for reviewing other proposals as they come in. Obviously, we will not have that ready yet this year, but hope to have that ready to roll out for the next subsequent round of requests. But that will stand for any questions.
Any questions? I heard you about to ask a question.
We were talking earlier about highlighting the not double dipping that subdivision 9 in the proposal, but maybe Heather, you'd all think that that wasn't the appropriate place for that either. But that, you know, that's kind of a remaining hanging issue that you know, MLT came and made their proposal, which required our action on. I don't know if it's really the right place to be in the call or not.
Mr. Chair, Jane, that language is in statute.
Right.
So we don't, unless that statute changes, every time somebody has it, they'd have to come before us anyway.
Right. And we reference the statute to it.
Right.
So.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for asking a question I was going to ask.
Oh. If there are any other changes, though, please, you know, let us know within the next week or two, because we will be hoping to publish this by the 1st of April. So. If you find anything else after the meeting, just please let us know.
Yeah. I think we'd like to come out of here with a, you know, subject to any fine-tuning, a recommendation to publish this as our a formal action body. So I'd love to have a motion to approve this subject, any minor tweaks that come up that clarify and make sure we don't miss anything. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That was all. Since we're going to do elections, Sandy, would you run out into the hall and tell people to get in here? Sure, we'll take a 5-minute recess, be back here at 35.
See you on Monday.
Okay. I understand there's a little bit of a traffic jam in the hallway that makes it difficult to come and go. Next on our agenda is the election of council officers. And you have in front of you, at the bottom of your packet, sort of our procedure. The officers, just to refresh everyone's memory, are the chair, vice chair, secretary, treasurer, and a legislative member. We elect first the chair, then the vice chair, then the secretary, then the treasurer, then the legislative member. We do have a proxy for Barry that Bob Anderson has. As I said, Barry's on a train and couldn't even call in today, which made it impossible for him to participate. So he's given his proxy to Bob. What's different this year is that the votes by ballot actually become public after the meeting. That's not been the case in the past. That's the new read of what the open meeting law is. So you all have your name on a ballot. You put it in the deal. They'll tally it. And after that's done, who voted for whom is public knowledge. And One of the things that we have to decide today, we have had in the past, Scott Rawl has been the designated person to work with the Conservation Partners program. And I think we have to have a little discussion at some point about whether or not we want that position to continue. It was originally set up as the program was launching to ensure there was some communication back and forth. It's now far more well established, and I think it's for the council to decide whether we need an official representative there, or we're comfortable with that program just coming and making presentations to the whole council. That's sort of a secondary issue that we'll cover after the election itself. So, any questions on what we're going to do?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, with regards to the election by written ballot, so our name is going to be on the ballot, and we're going to have a choice, and that will be read as soon as that's done, the tally's done, and that's where the numbers will come from, or are you talking about open to the public after it's all over with?
I mean, my understanding is that you'll have your name on a ballot, you'll put it in the deal, they'll tally it, and then after the meeting, who voted for whom in some form will be available to the public.
So that won't be talked about as to Bill, Senator Ingebrigtsen votes for so-and-so today.
I'm going to let Mark clarify this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My understanding is, at this point, and Janelle is actually going to see if Deb Dyson is available, but my understanding is that we have to divulge the votes today at the time the council receives them, so the public can receive them as well. So it's full transparency.
Chairman? Yeah. What if a member calls for a roll call? I mean, we roll call votes all the time. I've never taken a vote in my 14 years here in the legislature like that. It would seem to me that the most transparent thing for the public is that that the name, we take roll calls all the time, and it says McNamara votes, and he says yes or no, or however that is, and it would seem to me that then you'd have an immediate tally. There wouldn't be any question in the public. It would be on the record. There'd be no chance for anyone to interpolate hanging Chad that we're familiar with, and it just seems to me that under the open, in fact, I've served on a lot of different councils over the years, some of which I've chaired, and I've never written in my vote on a piece of paper and given it to anyone.
I'm not saying we shouldn't do that. Our procedure has been to do it by ballot, so rightly or wrongly, that's what we've done in the past. We've gotten a new interpretation that says it can be by ballot, but the ballot has to then, the vote on the ballot has to be disclosed. If you want to do it by roll call vote, it's fine with me. I'm trying to keep us from being in trouble with anyone. So, however you want to do it, the advantage of obviously doing a ballot that's then disclosed is the fourth person casting their vote doesn't hear the first three and have the advantage of knowing what other people are doing. But this is up to the council. It's not up to me. What would you like to do? What we need to do is make sure that the vote is disclosed in the end.
Good. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask for another 5-minute recess.
Okay. Anyone object to that? So, 5 minutes from now, and really 5 minutes from now, I'm going to come back. So, I heard lots of conversations and thoughts. I'm open to ideas. Bill?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, if anybody's got any other ideas. My idea would be to, whoever the nominees are, to be written on a ballot, and along with the name of the voter, and do your vote, pass it to staff, and staff reads it out loud. Do the same thing. There'd be nobody would know who's voting for what, or for who, but it's very transparent that way.
But then when the staff reads it, it would be who's voted for
right.
whom.
Yes.
That's right.
Okay?
And I'm fine with that.
Okay? Is everyone okay with that?
Good.
And then procedure thing, if you have three nominees, do you do an initial vote to cut that down to two, or how is that process going?
The Mason's rules require a majority vote. So if we have four people who are nominated and no one gets the vote, we do it again, and we do it again until we get to the majority. That's my understanding of how it works. Someone can drop out, but that's the way I believe it works under Mason's rules, which we operate under. Julie?
So under this process, because of the way that we can only elect from the remaining appointees from the other appointees, whatever, it's complicated. So we'll do a ballot first of the chair.
Yep.
Take care of that. Okay, so I'm just thinking.
It's cascaded.
Okay, got it.
All right, are we clear on the process at this point? All right, I will open up nominations for chair. Bill.
Mr. Chair, I nominate Bob Anderson.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I nominate David Hartwell.
All right. Any other nominations? Nominations, I believe, will close then. Do you want the candidates to say something, or do you want to just take a vote?
I feel like this is definitely the most difficult decision I hope to make today, if not even a longer period than that. It's hard when you don't know folks, very little experience, and it's a two-year term, so yes, I very much would like to hear a little bit from both candidates, and particularly how they feel the board chair or the council chair is really the goal of that role, and what you would see as your philosophy implementing that chair.
Okay. Do you want to go first, Bob, or would you like me to? Oh, want to flip a coin? Well, thank you for the nomination. My philosophy, we're going to elect an executive committee today. My philosophy is not to use it. I believe that decisions should be made by the whole group, not by a smaller group. We have it in place so in the event something comes up that needs quick action, we can get a smaller group together and get a quorum. But in the last 4 years, I don't believe we've used the executive committee. The one place where I have used a member of the executive committee is the vice chair in helping to determine an agenda. I thought that was a pretty effective way to get more than one person's perspective on what an agenda should be, and I would continue to do that. I'm basically interested in how are we consistent, how do we carry out the mandate in the Constitution, how do we have a broad view of conservation, how do we debate the issues. Ron and I are probably never going to agree on food plots, and yet we have an open discussion about that, and we try to influence each other and make each other understand that perspective. And that's so healthy for us, because as a group, we are more intelligent than as individuals. And so, you know, my goal is to continue a strategy of trying to include everybody in the discussion and look at the broad conservation issues. I also would say I think we've got a new executive director, and being able to work closely with the new executive director as he goes through his first allocation process is pretty important. You can do that by phone, but it's probably better to have an ability to do that, and I would commit to you that I do that as much as is required. I will continue to try to be open and fair. Yes, that's about, unless you have questions, that's my strategy.
Thank you. Thank you for the nomination, fellow members. I think I'd like to just give a few reasons why I'd be interested in chairing the council. And first, I would like to see that the chair maybe would move around regionally with council members. I've served on a number of organizations as chair, the president of the League of Minnesota Cities, chair of the board of directors of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. The folks who serve as chair of those organizations come from small cities and large cities, from all corners of the state. They come from small businesses and large corporations from all over the state, and I think that's healthy to the organization. I think it brings a different perspective to it and helps to guide it in its discussions. The experience that I've had in those organizations, and as mayor, I believe I can conduct these meetings in a very fair manner. Certainly want to, with your help, have the proper decorum in these meetings for good discussions and good decisions. Have a deep-seated feeling for the environment and habitat. Having spent 51 years with a paper company that was the second largest landowner in the state, private landowner in the state, and helping to manage the 310,000 acres that they had that were all open to the public and for recreational uses, for multiple uses. And so I think that, and then having private land and having planted over 10,000 trees on our properties, worked to have my children understand and my grandchildren understand that you just don't take from nature, but you give back. Take you some of your resources of time and money and make the necessary steps to have a good habitat for the future of our state. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone have any questions for either of us? It's fair to ask if you have questions. If not, Sandy, will you? I see you have the ballot, so I'm going to ask you to pass the ballot. Bob, irregardless of who wins, can I just keep running this meeting until the end of the meeting?
Absolutely.
Fair with you?
That's fair.
Okay.
Thank you.
The vote is 8 for Bob Anderson, 4 for David Hartwell.
Okay, here's the next chair.
You want to read the names?
I think that's what our agreement is.
Okay. Voting for Bob Anderson was David Dill, Barry Tilly's proxy, Bob Anderson, Julie Blackburn, Denny McNamara, Bill Ingridson, Jane Kingston, Ron Shera. Voting for David Hartwell was Tom Saxhawk, Sue Olson, David Hartwell, Elizabeth Wilkins.
All right. Nominations are open for the vice chair.
Chair, I would nominate.
Oh, and it has to come from either, I'm sorry, I didn't cover this, the governor or the House appointees.
Chair, I would nominate Jane Kingston.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I would nominate Julie Blackburn.
Either governor or House.
Governor or House.
Governor, is it governor or
House? Yeah.
They both governor appointees.
They can both be. They can't be from the Senate because Bob is governor. So the nominees. Are there any other nominees? The nominees are Julie and Jane. You want to say something? Jane, you go first because you.
Okay. This is hard for me to talk about myself, but I'll try to get through this. This is similar to what a lot of our counselors said when they were introducing themselves. It starts with a lifelong passion for conservation, evidenced by my field of study at the U of M, career experience at U.S. Steel as an environmental engineer, avocation, 2 years as a TNC trustee, and over 10 years service on state conservation boards, task forces, and councils, including 4 years on Lassard Sams. I've served in positions of leadership and directorship for such organizations as YMCA, United Way, My Church, Township Planning and Zoning, and Tasca Water Legacy Partnership, and many others, and I'm comfortable and confident doing so. I've served as the treasurer for 2 years, and I've worked for our committee to improve our process and call for funding and the evaluation criteria here for the Lassard Sams Council. My ongoing commitment is to work at the highest level, and that's why I'm really putting my name out there. I want to do as much as I possibly can the period of time that I'm given the honor of serving. I want to work harder than I've ever worked before and as hard as possible with maximum effort and effect towards creating permanent legacy for our voters and citizens and with focus riveted on the constitutional amendment that created the council and working with the legislature to be a functioning mutually beneficial relationship. Thank you.
Thank you. First off, I'm surprised, and there's definitely a part of me that feels like I should, you know, not accept that nomination. But I'm also here to serve, and if it is, you know, the will of the committee that I serve and the council that I serve in that capacity, I'd be willing to accept that responsibility.
Okay.
Yeah. You never let me get away with that.
I'm twisting my arm.
Right at the end. I'm waiting for this weekend. I'll pull it off myself.
For Jamie Kingston, 2 votes for Julie Blackburn. Those voting for Jane Kingston are Dill, Tilly, Anderson, Blackburn, Saxhaw, Hartwell, Shara, Wilkins, Ingridson, and Kingston. Those voting for Julie Blackburn are Denny McNamara and Sue Olson.
I would just correct you. Oh. There were 10 votes.
You said 12.
Oh, 10.
You can't have 12 votes for Jane.
Oh, sorry.
All right, so the next is for secretary, which has to come from the House.
I don't think it's three lines.
Is there any nominations for secretary?
There's a chart on the back here. I was secretary before. I signed the minutes, and once I got to hold the gavel and do a motion.
I nominate Ron Sheriff.
I'm
David.
That's it. Any other? Ron, what's your campaign speech?
I refuse to accept the nomination.
You don't want to sign stuff?
The other nominee. Congratulations. Can we just do a voice vote for me, I guess? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Treasurer, and this can be from any of the three, the governor, House, or Senate. Any other nominations? Other nominations? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Welcome to being president.
Bring your purse.
open the checkbook. Legislative member, in addition to being on the executive committee, the legislative member has to sign all of the expense reports. So,
I nominate Tom Sackler.
He's real happy about that.
Any other nominations? Did he say don't nominate me?
No.
All in favor of electing Tom Sackhog as the legislative member, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? motion carried.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Do we want to have an official person who is the liaison to the Conservation Partners Program, or are we past that at this point? Is a discussion we need to have next?
Mr. Chair, I would like to weigh in that I don't think we need a council member in that position. I think staff could do that. But as one of those that officially didn't vote for you, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for everything you have done, and I think it would be right for the audience and folks here to applaud. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, and you've done a great job. Scott did a great job bringing that program to the point where it's at now. It's a really good program, and I think it would be best if staff handled it. They're there all the time, and I know they have a lot of interaction with DNR and with CPL, so unless the council feels different, I think it would be better to be handled by staff.
Okay. Ron?
Mr. Chair, I wanted to echo Representative McNamara's comments about your role here with us. I came here 4 years ago, admired your evenness with all of us, the way you handled the discussions. I also appreciated your input on a lot of these things, and despite our joke about food plots, I think we agreed 99% of the time, and the food plot issue is just I'm right, and that's all there is.
I want everyone to know I brought in seed.
Yeah, and so David has given me a lifetime supply of milkweed seeds, which I'm going to do my share for the monarch butterfly. But truly, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
I'd like to jump on that bandwagon too, and I just expect David to work harder, maybe as a counselor, as hard as you've worked as the chair, and continue to be as vigilant and as articulate and conscious of the ongoing responsibility. I expect you to even be at a higher level than you've been.
I might have more time to read things.
Yeah. Thank you.
No, thank you. No, it truly is. It's been an honor, and I'll continue to serve and happy to be with you. But CPL, anyone feel strongly that we need a CPL representative?
Is staff okay with that? With not having a rep?
Is staff okay with that?
We will do our job.
Yeah. Ron? No.
I guess I'm okay with it. It's just that I'm concerned after our discussion on the Northwoods, if we don't keep our finger on the pulse, what might happen. But if staff then probably can keep a better finger on the pulse anyway, but if that's part of our duties, maybe we should continue. But I don't have a strong feeling one way or the other, except as we're here to serve. So,
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
This role is actually in our operating procedures, and I'm wondering whether we're actually requesting that there be altered operating
procedures. I was about to suggest that, so thank you. I think what we should do if we don't want this is obviously do nothing, but at the same time ask staff to bring back a revised operating procedure at the next meeting for us to amend.
And I have one more question, and that is the DNR is the recipient of this and manages this, and do we have their opinion about whether or not they feel there would be value in continuing this?
We're about to.
Mr. Chair, members, we'd be happy to continue working with staff. Our CPL staff work very closely. I'm sorry, for the record, Grant Wilson, Minnesota DNR. Our CPL staff work very closely with staff and members as issues, questions, challenges come up, and happy to do that.
Okay. So is it all right if we ask staff to bring back an amended operating procedure so that we take the reference to CPL out at the next meeting and you can vote on it at that time?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that, hopefully that will reflect that if there are any hiccups or are there any real, real issues that staff will bring them to us, because I for one, am very concerned about the rural programs. I mean, that was a little, there was a lot of discussion, a lot of work went into that. So it seems to be running pretty well.
I just think it's important for councilors to remember that we still will have regular updates from CPL here as the agenda item on council.
Okay. With that, you all get your picture taken right after this meeting in room 77, right behind us, for the web page.
You got my picture.
If you want a new picture.
My high school one, real quick.
You haven't changed.
Giving me a hard time.
Oh, actually, it was 7th grade. That's the first.
It's your last chance.
It's your last chance. In room 77, your picture will be taken.
Yeah,
please.
No way.
Please.
That's you knew that.
Legislators, we have your pictures.
And just a point of information, the OHF bill will be before the Legacy Finance Committee Monday. It starts at 12:45, then it breaks. It reconvenes after the session at about 4:15, and we are last on the agenda. So that's your chance to show up. I know we had someone in the audience who wanted to provide some public comment, specifically around Crow Wing. I made the executive decision that because they weren't on the list here, we would take it as public comment instead of as part of that discussion, because that discussion could then have gone on forever and ever. I don't know if that person is still here, but we're welcome for that or any other public comment at this time. Just announce yourself for the record, please.
For the record, my name is Daryl Palmer. I'm a citizen of the Brainerd Lakes area. Thanks for your time to give me today, Chair and fellow council members. I'm here today to hopefully maybe shed a little bit of light as a private citizen who's been somewhat involved. Who's been involved in the Potlatch acquisition for quite a number of years with Gary Gross and others. Maybe just a little background on myself. Grew up, born, and raised in Brainerd, moved to Spokane, spent about 15 years there, spent about 10 years in Kansas City, came back to Brainerd when my dad passed away. Bob, I think we know each other. I've been, my passion is I'm a grouse hunter. I love to bird hunt. I hunt 60, 70 days out of the year. I make time. I do what I can. So grouse hunting is my passion. I love to deer hunt. My dad helped start the Minnesota Deer's Chapter Association in Brainerd. Currently, I provide the storage for the hide boxes and for the fleshing operation. So I consider myself an avid outdoors person. I love to fish. I'm a lousy fisherman. I'm really Canada, sorry. But today I'm here because I sit on the Natural Resources Advisory Committee for the county. And prior to that, it's kind of been broken into two things. It was Parks and Trails at a point in time for one committee, lands and forests. They merged the two. So I've kind of seen the whole comprehensive trail planning process occur since I've been home. The county has gone through three iterations that I've seen of trying to get it right. They hired Dovetail Partners to help them figure out an appropriate plan for how to evaluate things. And I think they have a good process in place. Getting committee members to come to meetings is always a challenge. Getting people who can provide good input, willing to share that input is a challenge. And so sometimes maybe things don't communicate as well as they should. I worked hard since day one. Becca Nash knows me. Todd Holman knows me. To acquire this piece of land as well. I wrote letters as the ATV Association. I found myself in 06 helping found an ATV club because my sister talked me into it. I don't know what happened, what I said wrong one day, but I found myself in the role of starting an ATV club. And since that time, I've become a youth safety trainer. I'm an ATV trail ambassador. I do a ton of riding on behalf of the ATV clubs, and I try to promote safe, responsible recreational riding. I've seen tremendous changes in ATV riders and their views and habits since I've been involved in this. And I'm only telling that because I'm not an ATV rider. If it wasn't for the ATV club stuff, I probably wouldn't ride my ATV other than hauling my deer skin grill, Mark, or doing something in my cabin. I've got a cabin that abuts my Goose Lake Wildlife Management Area. I work my property in conjunction with the DNR. I consider myself an outdoors person, period. What I saw happen in this last debacle would be my observation is I attended a meeting, was invited to attend a meeting about a potential shared bridge on this piece of land over Sand Creek. The meeting was about who and how could we fund the potential bridge for all users to use, whether you're a blueberry picker, a grouse hunter, an ATV-er, snowmobiler, whoever. From that meeting, some people went and started fussing about the ATV trail. In my mind, the trails were there and existing. I didn't apply for that trail. It wasn't my club that applied for that. But I looked at the application. I think there's some changes. Gary and Greg and I met this past week. Gary and I have been talking for a couple of weeks. One thing I think really happened was, and I know you guys have a perspective on what should or shouldn't be done with those funds and how that property should be operated, but I, as a citizen sitting in Brainerd, can tell you that sitting on the committees, it's a normal thing for us to get applications, just like you guys get applications for projects. There was no ill view of we're going to shut out the private previous project management. I don't think any of us thought about that. It's been 2+ years since the land was acquired, and a club brought forth an application. If it was the Blueberry Pickers Association who said we wanted to maintain the existing trails, what would we have said? Would we have said, we'll analyze it the same way? And so I hope that when you think about what's happened there, it wasn't the intent of, gee, we're trying to go around the Sard Sands, we're trying to mismanage the property. It was simply a matter of no one really gave it any thought. I mean, it came before the county, and I think this stirring up that's occurred was people frankly not going back and knocking on the door of the county and saying, hey, we've got this issue, how about we bring it before a committee meeting, whether it's your committee, if it needed to be, or back to the county lands and forests natural resource committee, I think is what needed to occur. It should have been brought here, in my opinion, first off, and Gary and I and Greg are going to work together to try to find some solutions for that. But I've heard some discussions about some of the bad things about ATVs. Some of the things that would be gained out of this, if there was a grant made trail system in there that I've seen, is, sorry for a scratchy throat, when you get a trail ambassador, grant made trail, you get extra dollars to go with it. And I know I've heard discussion about should this be funded somewhere else or whatever, but you get funding for trail maintenance. So if there are problems, erosion, you can fix those. Number two, there's additional dollars that occur for enforcement. So you get additional conservation officers, otherwise you wouldn't get in there. And number three, you get trail ambassadors that are in there, guys who wear neon green vests with DNR patches. Everybody thinks you're a conservation officer. We're not. But what does it do? It makes people do the right things. As a trail ambassador, every day when we get done, we have to file a specific report. It's a DNR printed form, how many people we saw, how many machines were out there, how many walkers, bikers, how many safety issues we saw. We GPS any issues with maintenance. We GPS any issue and take pictures of any off-highway or off-vehicle trail travel, excuse me. So the DNR conservation officer can see that. There's a record of it every day. You don't have to take my word. Go to the DNR, ask them for the trail ambassador stats, and they'll show you the changes that occur. In our county, our clubs worked hard to make sure we change our image. We have over 25% of the statewide trail ambassador in Crow Wing County. We did that because we want good trails. We want people to have safe, responsible recreation. We don't want to lose our trails. So when you have that many people out there able to do that kind of work, it brings positive benefits. I can give you a specific example. In Pine Center, the southeastern corner of our county, a couple years back was a big newspaper ad in Minneapolis paper about rampaging riders. Some of you may remember that, and that may be why some of you have bad feelings about ATVs, because they were riding off the trail. They were riding in farmers' fields. They were riding in their farm ponds. The Trail Ambassador Program got started. Our club specifically targeted that area to ride on a consistent basis Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We made sure we stopped the farmers. We talked to the landowners around it. We talked to the business owners. And we made sure they saw us and we were visible. After 2 years, there was another trip proposed down that region. The local conservation officer, Paul Kosky, who had been having nothing but problems with ATVs prior to the Trail Ambassador Program, came unannounced, unrequested, to a meeting regarding a Grant Made Trail in that region. And he told the township, you want this. You want it because since they put the Trail Ambassador Program in here, I've had zero complaints. That's what I hope to accomplish if there's a trail system on that piece of land. It's not meant to be. The frustration I have is when I hear discussions about the numbers of people you're going to see, the Trail Ambassador stats are there to speak for themselves. Look at the system we'll be compared. Look at Pine Center. Look at some of the different ones that are smaller segments. This isn't a big trail segment. You'll probably see on an average day, on a weekend, 6-8 people riding an ATV in there. You're just not going to see, as a Trail Ambassador, we don't see that kind of traffic. So I know you have an issue on funding. Is it the appropriate funding for this? I suggest that as a citizen of the area who thinks it's a great area, and I grew up on the Rice District area right there, so I'm very familiar with this property, rode my dirt bike when I was a kid. I suggest we go to Parks and Trails and get some money if that's the big issue. As a citizen, I think it's a great piece of land. It needs to be managed properly. I believe the county has the wherewithal to do that. They've got a good comprehensive trail planning process. You can look at the specifics. If you want more input into it, that's great. But I think that rather than having additional different management plans, I think it's good to have one management plan so it's easily taken care of. All right. That's what I've got. Questions? Thank you. Thank you. Any other public comments? If not, we're adjourned. Thank you.